It's time for Windows Weekly, kind of a slow week coming off Labor Day. So Paul and Mary Jo thought they'd take some time to talk about Microsoft futures. What's going to happen later this year? Big hardware announcement, Ignite's coming up. There's lots to talk about, even delving back a little bit into Paul and Mary Jo's early history. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 482, recorded Tuesday, September 6th, 2016. Five bank robberies. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Windows news weekly from the folks in beautiful Redmond, Washington. Courtesy my fine co-hosts, the wonderful, the talented, Paul Thurrott at Thurrott.com.
I assumed you were talking about Mary Jo there. I kind of tuned out a second.
I know. And Mary Jo Foley, she's saying, wait a minute, you were talking about me. How come you showed Paul from AllAboutMicrosoft.com? Hello, lady and gentleman.
Hello.
Welcome once again. Welcome back to the show. How are y'all?
Great.
I'm on day four of a long weekend, Leo.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yesterday was Labor Day. So did you barbecue? Did you do anything fun? Did you drink some beer?
I did something crazy.
What'd you do? So
I went on a sailboat.
Nice.
With some friends, but it was the day before the tropical storm.
Oh, Hermine. Yeah.
Yeah. So the water was so choppy. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Oh, that is crazy.
I survived. The only thing that did not was one of the beers I opened.
Did they forget that there was a storm coming, or did they look forward to that?
We had a long-standing reservation, so we decided to go forward.
I think it's a wonderful. And it looks like
moguls for the water.
The storm did hit Paul's hair, so there's.
I know. It's just. It's been a weird day, Leo.
We're going to call you Hermine.
I'm about 2 weeks past due for a haircut here.
Wow. It doesn't look like it's of you. It looks like it's a separate accoutrement.
No, it's real. It's there.
I think it's time for him to do a head shaving challenge again.
I know.
I love it. No, you know what? Knock on that wood. You got hair.
So many,
I have the receding hairline, which comb hair forward to hide that.
Sure. The comb forward.
The comb forward.
The comb sideways. The comb back.
Yeah.
The comb under. The comb over.
Yeah. Yesterday, bobby pins were spotted in Donald Trump's hair as he spoke in Mexico.
Alligator clips.
Haven't tried that yet. Wow. Might do it.
Yep. Were they orange or no?
Yeah, they were camouflaged. They dipped them in Cheeto dust. We are here to talk about Windows. Now, the reason we're here today, for those who watch live and are saying, what, is of course tomorrow. Apple will suck all the air out of the room with its event, even if what Apple is announcing is of absolutely, no import because it's we polished it.
Yep.
We polished it up and took away the headphone jack. How do you like me now?
Yeah.
But you know how it is. I mean, everybody knows how it is. This is, in fact, if Samsung were smart, they would have announced the recall tomorrow.
I know.
Yep. Nobody would have heard about it.
Right.
So we've flip-flopped MacBreak Weekly and Windows Weekly so we could do the live thing. We'll do the live coverage of that Apple event
Who's
tomorrow.
Usually on MacBreak Weekly?
You can't even say it, can you?
Andy Anako, that guy.
Angie Anako. Actually, and it's going to be a weird MacBreak Weekly tomorrow because, well, there are two people in the world. People who get invited to Apple events and those of us who don't.
Right.
So those of us who don't will be hosting the Mac show tomorrow because everybody else will be in an auditorium drinking some fine Kool-Aid.
You got to get a close look at that phone that looks exactly like the other phone.
Yeah. Fine Kool-Aid. It's good. It's the best
Fly Kool-Aid. Across the country and
Sure. So, Andy and I are stay-at-home dads and we'll be doing the and Megan Maroney as well. We'll be doing the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of the keynote tomorrow, starting at about 9:45 Pacific, 12:45 Eastern, and then immediately after MacBreak Weekly with whoever's left, Renee Ritchie can't do it. Nobody can do it because they're all amongst the anointed. Do I sound bitter? Yes, I am.
No, we have the same thing when we do Microsoft live events, and then you guys want us to come on for Tech News Today. It's like, well, every single person is at the
stand. You're working.
Yeah.
You're doing the work of the angels, as Mother Teresa might have said. And and given that, I'm thrilled that you could flip-flop for us today. And besides, as Paul so eloquently put it last week, I don't want to be talking about Apple. you can reasonably not talk about Apple today until next week.
Don't get me wrong, Leo. I'm going to go to town on Apple tomorrow.
I know. I follow your Twitter during those Apple events. You are my snark writer.
I mentioned this to my wife, and she said, what are you going to do if they don't say anything stupid and don't annoy you in any way? And I said, I'm going to disappoint a lot of people.
Don't worry. Don't worry, honey. That's unlikely. Don't worry, hon. Yep. It's going to be, you didn't want to talk about Apple, but I'm sorry, I'm going to do that. It's going to be interesting to see how, the only interesting thing will be to see how the spin on removing a headphone jack. That's really going to be an exercise in marketing genius.
Actually, since we're on this topic, I will float in this idea that is not my idea, that I actually sort of agree with, that it's possible, given that Apple can't keep anything a secret, this might have been somewhat planned. Like, let's slip this headphone thing months in advance so that when it does actually happen, it doesn't have the burst of outrage. We all knew it was happening. Why be outraged by it now? We knew this was happening.
Well, now's your chance to complain about it, though. I mean, you couldn't really complain about it until they actually announced it. You should only pre-complain.
I'm curious to see how they cast it, because obviously they're going to do it as some kind of pro-consumer thing. When in fact, it's just another part of their wonderful little lock-in plan for everybody.
Yeah. I'm not bitter. But I do like my headphone jack. I use it every day. I use it all the time.
I would be sad if I couldn't use my headphones.
It's more pragmatic than that. Like, even if you use Bluetooth headsets, and that's what you preferred, you get on a plane, and the thing you're using doesn't have any battery life, and now you're stuck.
Yeah. I'm a pretty big investment in headphones that use headphone jacks. And do I want to carry a lightning to mini jack?
No, it's another thing to forget, another thing to lose.
And another thing that will break and cost, $35 to replace, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So even, I think I might have told the story. I bought those Bose in-ear noise-canceling headphones, which I wear every day.
That's what I'm taking on my trip. Yeah.
So you know that there are two models. There's one that works only for iPhones, and then there's one that works for everything else. And the one that works for everything else actually works fine with an iPhone. I'm not even quite sure what the difference is. But this is the world of everything in the future, right? I mean, there'll have to be these special versions, that target iPhones specifically. And I just don't understand what the point of that is.
Because they do something slightly different with the microphone. And controls. Okay. Actually, not the microphones, controls. So with the Apple one, you get four rings.
I mean, I can pause, mute,
But Apple, you get four rings, I think, on your jack. And on normal headphones, you get three. Well, normally you get two for stereo, left and right. For ones with pause play, you get three. And then Apple has some additional controls that get you a fourth. Yeah. I think something like that. It's silly. Right. But, it's all right. It's fine. It's just that it's kind of a closed universe, and it's becoming more and more proprietary and unusual. And what's hysterical to me in context of Windows Weekly, is this is a complete flip-flop of Apple and Microsoft's roles in some respects. Maybe not. You know, Microsoft's always been open. I mean, at least they've been a platform and encouraging to third-party developers. But I feel like Apple is becoming more arrogant, let's put it that way, as you become more of a monopoly.
More? Is it even possible?
I don't even know what to say.
Well, they weren't arrogant. No, you know, in my days, in 1984, when they were, you know, a tiny fraction of the market. Actually, they were arrogant
before. They were arrogant then, IBM to the...
No, they were arrogant in the Apple II days because they were dominant. Then they were very weak when during Bill Gates' ascendancy in the 90s. Apple practically went out of business. In fact, was saved by Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. And
Leo, people don't like that story.
They don't like that story.
That doesn't fit the revisionist history.
Yeah, and then they kind of flip flopped the equation, which is interesting.
I think
we just need to flip flop the market share now.
Yeah,
I don't want to flip flop it, but man, changing it somewhat would be great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all I'm really for in the world is competition, because choice is good for consumers. And consumers can choose not to have a headphone port. And I'm guessing they will by the tens of millions.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious to see how that goes.
So we don't want to talk about Apple.
Yeah. Hey, Leo, listen.
Okay, we did our Apple
moment.
Like
I said earlier, we got nothing, so...
Item one.
A look ahead. Our predictions for the iPhone.
Oh, Lord. Don't do that to me. Mm-hmm. I just did check. There's no new build for normies.
Right.
So we can't talk about that. We do have... we're about to enter. In October, we will enter. October, November, December. Mm-hmm. The final quarter of the calendar year. And as we often euphemistically say, the holiday buying period.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Your predictions for the holiday buying period from Microsoft.
Yeah, so this is how we came up with this idea. Paul and I this morning were like, hey, we have like nothing to talk about on Windows Weekly today.
This has never happened.
It's never happened.
And I want to be really clear. I went through both of our sites. One of us will do the notes first. You know, it's whoever gets to it. And you kind of look at both sites and you pick out the articles and you make this list and you kind of form them into a certain way. And then the other person will come in and edit it and everything. Okay. And I went through both of our sites and I came up with one thing that frankly could easily be ignored. And that has never happened.
I know. So
that has never happened.
So we said, you know what would be kind of interesting? Let's look ahead, because we're entering what is going to be a very busy period for Microsoft in the next few months. And why not talk about what we think is going to happen and make some predictions for the three different groups that comprise Microsoft and tell people what we think is going to happen in the next 3 to 4 months. So that's how we came up with today's topic list. And it's interesting when you're thinking about that, because there's some things that are kind of like the watchwords almost. The things that are still true about Microsoft, no matter when you're talking about them, is they're still going for the whole productivity and platforms and cloud first, mobile first messages. So that kind of overrides everything. But then when you kind of dig into the different groups, we have some things that we think are going to happen in the next few weeks, months. So the first thing, let's talk about Windows and devices first, because this is Windows Weekly. I think we're both kind of wondering if Microsoft is going to do a fall hardware event. And I'll tell you something funny that somebody asked me on Twitter last week. Somebody said, are you watching the bookies in Vegas? They're betting that Microsoft is going to do a hardware event on 10/10. Like, they're actually placing bets on this.
Really? 10/10?
Yeah. So I looked at 10/10. It's Columbus Day.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe...
That's a bad bet.
maybe not.
You don't do it on a holiday.
They've done events on Columbus Day before.
Really? Really interesting.
Yep. Last year, the hardware event was the week before that. It was the very first week of October when they did the big Band 2 Surface Book, Surface Pro 4 launch.
Right.
So we both have heard rumors that there is going to be some kind of a Microsoft fall.
But we haven't really heard much about it, right? I mean, last year I knew about Surface Pro 4. I knew there was going to be a laptop with a removable screen, which sounded so crazy. I downplayed it in the weeks before the show. I haven't heard anything this year. I mean, Brad had the rumor about, I don't know if they're Xbox or I guess they were Xbox branded streamer devices similar to Chromecast and a Roku or whatever. I suppose that's still a possibility. But I, you know, as far as Surface goes, I haven't directly heard anything, right? I mean, I know there have been rumors around an all-in-one, and that could be any time. Obviously, at some point, we expect Surface Book 2 and Surface Pro 5, but I think that stuff is probably.
I think that's next year.
I mean, have you heard anything directly about this fall?
I've heard from tipsters that there could be a fall hardware launch, and it either could be Microsoft highlighting third-party devices that are ready for Windows 10, or it could be a combination event where they're highlighting partner devices and also doing a very minor refresh to the Surface line with something like some new chips in the Surface Pro 4, something kind of like that.
Like a Kaby Lake but, Surface 4.
Yeah, but
Surface
very low-key for them. I think we both heard spring is the more likely big bang.
Yeah, I mean, with IFA just happened last week, right? So that's typically been the big partner moment for them. Every year, Microsoft heads off to IFA, and every year people wonder if they're going to announce something there, and they never do, ever.
No, and people should just know that's not how they do events anymore. When they're going to announce big hardware,
every year, this is,
it's their own thing, right? They do their own event.
Every year.
So I don't know if they're going to do a fall hardware event, and if they did, most likely in New York, like they've done, I think, the past two times. But we haven't gotten an invitation. We haven't heard anything.
Right.
Usually they'll give you a month's heads up on an event, not like Apple with a 1 week heads up. But yeah, so far nothing. It's been very quiet.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, so I think that's about all we know on hardware.
I think the bookies are only doing 10-10 because of Windows 10, right?
Yeah, that's my guess why they're doing it.
By the way,
and they know October is typically when Microsoft does a hardware event.
They'll bet on anything. They'll bet which raindrop is going to hit the bottom of the window first. I mean, I don't think it's meaningful.
I know. No, but it's funny they were asking me what I thought. I guess so they could place bets.
Some guy named Nathan Detroit come to you and say, so Mary Jo, if you were a betting woman.
On Surface Pro 5, what do you say? What do you think?
I know. What do you think? What odds would you give that?
Me and the boys was wondering.
I think no Surface Pro 5 or Surface Book 2 this year. I'm pretty sure
Surface Pro 4S.
Ooh. With a headphone jack or without? Nah, I don't think so. And I don't think I don't even think we're going to see a Band 3 this fall. Some people were speculating that. Some people were saying Surface 4, you know, the successor to the Surface 3. I don't think we're going to see that either. I'm not 100% sure, but we've got no tips on any of this so far, which makes me think.
And Surface has been kind of curiously vocal lately about the current products. And I think we speculated a few weeks ago maybe that this was like that perfect middle time between last year's October launch and what we anticipate to be a spring launch in 2017.
Yep.
So we probably, you know, I mean, we probably will have some in October. I don't know about Columbus Day, right? But so if you were a betting woman, what would you say the odds would be?
I haven't heard anything. Like I said, not that things can't change. I mean, they've done a better and better job each year of keeping secrets and all that kind of stuff. But I've heard nothing about this fall.
I'm kind of thinking they will do a hardware event of some kind, just because this is kind of how they show momentum, and maybe it'll be a partner event. Maybe it'll be like, hey, come see all the cool stuff for the holiday.
Yeah, but that could come out as something that we're not even part of. It could be the fall event that they do for mainstream press around the holiday selling season, which is that sort of thing. We've gotten rumors about this kind of thing in the past as well, right around the time of a Surface launch, where it was really just Lenovo was in New York or HP was in New York, and it's not – or actually some of them were in San Francisco as well, remember? you know, those events that, oh, maybe this is, you know, some Microsoft combined with partner type event. And it really never was.
No.
So I don't know. I have to say, if I were going to bet, I would almost bet on nothing from Microsoft.
You might. I think we're going to see.
Not like last year.
A refresh of the Surface hardware, perhaps. But will they do an event around that or keep it low key and just say, hey, here it is on the website? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just have nothing. It's the type of thing that makes sense. I've just never heard. So I can't really. Nope. I can't really go in that direction. I don't know.
But don't worry, fans, Server fans, there will be a big launch of Windows Server 2016 this fall at Ignite, which is at the end of this month. That's Microsoft's going to make that the launch event for Windows Server 2016. So you're going to start hearing even more about this product, which is the next version of Windows Server. It won't be shipping as of the end of this month. It'll probably be shipping as of early October, but they will definitely be talking about every new feature. They'll talk a lot about PowerShell. They'll talk about Nano Server. We're going to hear a lot of Windows Server 2016 this month.
Good.
So be ready.
I'm so excited.
For that.
A couple things on Windows Server. You'll notice they're not using the 10 naming convention, and no one is saying that this is the final version of Server, right? They're not using the same terminology or anything like that, like they did with Windows 10. And yet, don't you sort of get the feeling that not necessarily that this is the last version of Server, but that this is the dividing line between the past and the future, like every day is obviously. But I mean, in Microsoft's case, that Server was really a big focus of theirs in the past, but the cloud is the future. And that Server gets kind of decremented, de-emphasized going forward, that there will be features, many features, that debut first in the cloud. As happens, like, say, with Office 365, and then are later ported back to 2016 or some version of Windows Server.
Yeah.
And some that will never be. You know, that this thing becomes almost a more focused product on specific workloads for specific types of businesses, and it kind of trails off from here.
Kind of like SharePoint, right? Like, there are going to be more versions of SharePoint Server, too, but... Yeah. It's not
Exchange
really where they're
the
putting
thing.
Their. Yeah, they're not putting all their eggs in those baskets. Yeah.
I think this is an. I think this is going to be. It's going to be interesting to see how they communicate that, right?
Yeah.
Because obviously they want people to move to the cloud, companies to move to the cloud in this case, and you know, how do you position this brand new on-prem server product in that world? Probably mostly in hybrid configurations.
Mm-hmm. Right. The other related product they're going to talk a lot about at Ignite and into next year is Azure Stack, which is an on-premises version of Azure, basically, that partners and large customers are going to be able to run in their own data centers. And at the partner show we were at recently, Microsoft said, you know, we're redoing the plan for Azure Stack. It's not going to be you bring your own hardware. It's going to be a bundle of hardware that's been pre-approved with our software. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see the next tech preview of that at Ignite, and then the product ships next year at some point. So I think we'll hear a lot about that too. But again, it's not Windows Server. It's more like almost exactly like Azure, except for on-premises use.
Yeah, it's a cloud in a box.
Yep. The successor to the cloud in the box stuff they've been doing. So, yeah, those at least are going to be some big bang fall.
So what about launches. Windows 10? What can we expect for Windows 10 this fall?
Windows 10 this fall. Well, more insider builds, right?
And that's
but
it,
not
right,
the official
it?
Launch of Redstone 2, but yeah.
Right.
Although we will, as Microsoft has told us, we're going to hear more about Windows Holographic, which is an offshoot of Windows 10 that's the operating system that powers the HoloLens.
Right.
And at the WinHack conference, which is the first week of December this year in China, Microsoft's going to talk more about what it's doing with third-party hardware vendors to bring Windows Holographic to augmented reality and virtual reality devices. So that actually could be very interesting to see how they do that. How do you do that? Yeah,
they almost need to move more quickly on this stuff because I realize Xbox is a different topic. But when the thing that seems to be missing at Microsoft is this kind of VR thing. Like they pay a lot of lip service to it, but they don't really have an in-house VR solution of any kind. We've talked before about this notion of the combination of augmented reality and virtual reality and mixed reality and what that means. And but we don't know what form that takes, whether we're talking about Windows or the Xbox. You know, Sony has a PlayStation VR product coming out this fall. There are several products available for PCs. What's Microsoft's play here? You know, opening up HoloLens is a big deal, but it seems like it's only part of the story.
Yeah.
I think
I think the story is they take Windows Holographic, or at least the foundation of Windows Holographic, and they make it licensable by people like Dell and others who are building virtual reality devices and saying, hey, we'd like you to use this as the operating system.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked before on a previous show where we were kind of wondering, does Microsoft then come out with a consumer version of HoloLens, or does it say our OEMs are going to do that and we're doing only the business version? That's a good question that we still don't know the answer to, right?
Right.
But this show maybe will kind of shed some more light on kind of where that's going and what it means to open up the holographic platform to other companies.
You mean WinHack?
The WinHack show, yep.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to go to WinHack, by the way.
I know.
can we figure that out? Could somebody send us to WinHack?
Do you want to go?
It's in China, right? Yeah,
totally. It's in China. First week of December. So
China would be a beautiful place to spend the holidays, Mary Jo.
You'll just be back from Amsterdam. You could go further east instead of back home.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Yeah. Unless you want to continue on with this exciting speculation.
We can take a break.
You want to talk about Xbox? Streamers?
Yeah, it goes back to the thing Brad was talking about, you know, this notion of Chromecast and Roku-style streamers. You know, it's the one thing Microsoft doesn't have. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what's the best way to get Microsoft Entertainment Services in the living room, and there really are no good ways. Obviously, an Xbox is one way, but an Xbox is expensive. It's got a big fan. It's not for everybody. They don't really have that little Roku type device. And
I see.
Brad had some rumors that they were working on some, and I feel
that's
like they're really
terrible
overdue.
Market though. There's no margin. You got to sell it for $99.
Yeah. So
even Apple has never really gotten past the it's a hobby stage.
So what they should do is just release those apps on Roku and Amazon Fire TV and Apple TV. And I don't know why they don't do that.
Or make the Xbox more capable. I mean, I gave up actually because remember I bought the Xbox One as a media center. I bought the Kinect so I could talk to it. And I've replaced it with One S, and I don't even pass my stuff through it anymore. It's the gaming machine.
Yeah.
I just get tired of it.
The problem with all these solutions, though, is there's no one box that does everything. You know, you can get a Roku, and it does a bunch of services. Right. Google's actually on there, but only the video stuff. If you get an Apple TV, you're not getting any Google. You're not getting any Amazon. You're not getting any Microsoft. The only interesting thing about putting a PC in a living room is you could get everything on a PC. It's the one thing that could do everything. But, of course,
that's hard. PC nobody's going to do that.
Not an ideal way to do this. It's a mess, and I keep coming back to it. I keep looking at it, and there's no.
I get the strong impression Microsoft doesn't even want to be in that business. They killed, you know, Media Center. They killed the Windows Media Extenders. They killed. I mean, they killed the home server.
Zune.
I don't feel like that's the business they care about. They don't want to be.
I agree with that. I guess the only thing I would say is, and because I really felt like that we were moving down this path, where clearly they don't care about this stuff. You know, they have a movies and TV service that's only available on Windows devices. It's ridiculous. That said, this year has seen incredible improvements to Groove across platforms. They've improved it on Windows and Windows Mobile. They've improved it on Android and iOS and on the Xbox. And honestly, aside from the fact that it doesn't have a family plan, which remains a big missing piece there, Groove has turned into something pretty cool again. And I don't know. Maybe that's the type of thing you can do with a small team and it's not core to what they're doing. I don't know. But that's the one thing that makes me hold out a little bit of hope that they're going to finally try to get that stuff right. Or they'll just pull a Microsoft and just walk away again. I don't know.
You know, I wonder sometimes if they are staying in that part of the business because they're staying in gaming. You know, the one area in consumer that they are not abandoning, and in fact they're ramping up in, is gaming. So you can make a case that Groove is related to that.
Was before. Remember, it was Xbox Music. You know, they tried that. It's part of it's a checkbox or a like a bullet point on an entertainment slide that Microsoft has. You know, Xbox is huge. It's a great brand, and then we have this other stuff.
Oh well. You know, it's not just Microsoft. The tech world is littered with abortive starts. You know, start. Oh, let's try this. Yeah. No, never mind. Let's not do this.
Yeah.
But the ones that hurt are the ones that are really good, right?
Oh yeah,
It's not just Microsoft. Tons of those too. Media Center is obviously a great example of that. Even Zune, it started out terrible, but by the time the Zune HD came out, they were really onto something special.
Microsoft the WebOS just an enterprise like company? Aren't they just saying we're going to do enterprise?
No, they're not.
I'm telling you, Wall Street would love it if that were true, but so far, still not true.
Well, what's the consumer play that they still have going?
The gaming.
Skype. Okay, besides Skype, I guess gaming.
Well, Xbox, right? Xbox is their one hugely successful consumer brand. I think you could make an argument that Windows falls into this a little bit because it's something, you know, millions and millions of people still buy Windows PCs every quarter. So,
and Minecraft, too, plays into the gaming.
Yeah, Minecraft. Yeah. Right. That falls into Xbox for me. I mean, it's game.
They acquired Minecraft when Satya was CEO, so he hasn't turned his back on that.
Yep. There's a bunch of stuff. Yeah, there's educational and software development aspects to Minecraft that are really interesting, and I think that played a big role. It's not just. It's not like they bought some big popular game.
Oh, I agree. Right? 100%.
It's more than.
Yeah. And they've been, as I've said many times, good stewards.
Yeah, right. And that's really interesting. You know, we'll see how that goes. I this will happen years too late, but I suspect they'll finally get it right, and they'll merge all the platforms, and they'll have that cross-platform capability, and it'll be awesome, and we'll be playing Angry Birds 17 by then or something.
Yeah, the kids, they're going to grow up. You just feel it slipping away.
Yeah.
It's very hard to maintain that stuff. Really, really. Yeah. Is. Look at Pokemon Go.
Right. Yeah, they had a good 15 minutes in the sun.
Minecraft at least has had,
when the servers were
5-6 years. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Minecraft has been an ongoing concern.
And Mojang always did a great job of adding new features to make it more interesting. And under Microsoft, they've added some really, some really good, strong stuff. They've enhanced it in many ways.
Has Mojang released anything other than Minecraft since Minecraft?
Yeah, they did a card game.
Okay.
Not a physical card.
This is the problem, right? When you have such a hit like this, following it up is usually very difficult.
Yeah. You know, Mojang really was Marcus Persson. I mean, he really was the heart and soul of Minecraft.
So obviously retaining him would have been key to this acquisition. What happened there?
They gave him a lot of money and said, so long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, could be he. And, they did this game, Scrolls, which was, I think Notch wanted to do Scrolls. I'm pretty sure he did. And then that was 3 years ago. I'm sure it's sort of popular. There are, Blizzard did a much more popular card game since then that, it's interesting. It is hard. It's look at Rovio.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of premium or Angry Birds 17, it's like all they can do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not like Microsoft ever did that.
They closed Scrolls. I'm sorry. Scrolls closed in 20. When was a Microsoft acquisition?
Of Minecraft?
Yeah.
Was not it quite 2 years ago, maybe.
They stopped working on Scrolls in 2015, June 2015.
Oh, I wonder if that was the date the acquisition actually cleared or something.
2014 was when Microsoft bought them.
Interesting. Okay. So I don't know if they bought just Minecraft or if they got Scrolls too, but Mojang says they're going to close. They said they would close the servers. They're still going, I think. Mm. Anyway, it's
Microsoft bought all of Mojang, it looks like.
Okay, so they bought Scrolls too. Scrolls was, you know.
Yep.
It's hard to come up with, you know, I've come up with one hit, and after that, it's just copying.
Sure.
You know, it's life. Yep. It's life. Elton John wrote one song. It's just the way it is. All the Beatles songs are basically one song. No, that's not true.
What?
I have to stop right there. Yep. Some people are actually, you know, geniuses. The rest of us, we just slog along.
Mm-hmm.
So have we completed our prognostications for Microsoft's fourth
Windows and devices?
I think we've completed the stuff for this year.
Okay. Next year.
But we have more. We have more prognostications.
More to talk about. Divisions. Well, let's stop for a moment. Give you guys a breather because you've been working so hard. And me too, for that matter. And talk about ZipRecruiter. This is a great place to know about if you're in the position, I almost said unenviable position of hiring at your company. But actually, in a way, while it's a challenge, you know, hiring the right person, it's a high-stakes game. I guess that's why it's tough, right? Because hiring the right person makes a huge difference. Hiring the wrong person makes a huge difference. Could go both ways. But let's assume, and I think it's safe to say, the right person is there. There is a job opening at your company, and somewhere out there in the world, at least one person would be so good for that position. So now the next thing as a hirer you've got to figure out is how do you reach that person? And that's why I love ZipRecruiter, because instead of just posting to one job board in one, you know, field or region, you're posting to more than 100 job boards. In every industry, every city, nationwide, you're getting to the most people. You also get posted to Twitter and Facebook and, you know, LinkedIn, all the social media. So with one click of the mouse, you're getting everywhere. You're getting everywhere. And I love that. It is a wonderful way to reach the most people. And then they have such a great system for intaking these applications. You will start getting applications right away. ZipRecruiter matches them. Not only, you know, posts it everywhere, but matches it to 6 million current resumes in their database because people come to ZipRecruiter. It's a job site as well. So you're going to instantly start, you know, getting apps. But you're not going to get applications in your inbox or your phone. No, please. Heaven forfend. All the candidates roll into the ZipRecruiter interface, which makes it so easy. So easy. To screen them, you can even create screening questions and essay, multiple choice, or yes-no questions so that you can get more information from those prospective candidates. Look at their responses in conjunction with their resumes, perfectly formatted. You know, you're not looking at 1,800 different ways of – it's all formatted just for you. Rate them. Screen out the people you don't want and hire the right person fast. They make it as easy as pie. 1 million businesses have used ZipRecruiter. More than, what was the total number there? 146,942,338 candidate applications have been delivered. Lord, yikes. And it just works. And I want you to try it free so you will know it works. The right person's out there. How do you get to them? ZipRecruiter.com/windows. We use it, and I think you will love it. We love it. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Windows free for you today, right now, if you go there and give it a shot. And then, of course, you know, the reason it's free is they know that first person you're going to say, oh, this worked so well, and then you'll be back, right? It's a good way to run a business. First one's free. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Windows on Windows Weekly, our weekly show all about the latest from Microsoft. And if nothing's going on, well, these are the first people to know it.
I need that on my tombstone.
Do you really? Okay, this is the next bullet point. You wrote it, not me. Rewriting history. Could Microsoft have won the mobile market?
Actually, someone else wrote that, and I.
You say you poo-pooed it.
I've had incredible interactions with Microsoft over the years, but the most incredible was with the Windows Mobile guys back in the 2006, 2007, 2008 timeframe.
Well, they've got to believe. I mean, if you're doing a product, you're going to believe. You're not going to do a product you think, well, this is probably a flop, but I'm going to try anyway.
Hmm. Well, if they thought that, they were idiots because what they put out was terrible. And I had it, you know. Their initial reaction to the iPhone was to take Windows Mobile and put this veneer over the top of it that was touch-friendly. And so there was a lock screen. Actually, the lock screen was pretty innovative for the day. But then there was a home screen or a start screen that was just, you know, was touch-friendly. So it kind of looked like an iPhone. But once you got past that first menu, once you ran any app, once you got anywhere into the OS, what you discovered was a system that had been developed over a decade to work solely with a little stylus, you know, because they had tiny little check boxes and little scroll bars and things, and it wasn't touch friendly. And Windows Mobile had all kinds of other problems, of course, but I think the big one was that Microsoft, you know, we were talking about like Angry Birds and how companies that are successful doing one thing just kind of try to repeat that success again and again. You know, Windows Mobile, which began life as Windows CE and went through various permutations as palm-sized PC and pocket PC and whatever else it was called, you know, suffered from that. It was, let's take this thing called Windows 95 that's really successful. Let's put it down on a really small screen. We'll have exactly the same UI. There'll be a start button. There'll be a start menu. We can't have a mouse in this kind of a device, so we'll use a little stylus. This is the thing, you know, Steve Jobs made fun of when he launched the first iPhone. And, you know, I don't know. For the day, I guess it made some sort of sense. But I actually think that the thing that really screwed it up wasn't so much its multiple hardware partners, all of whom had unique hardware and unique resolutions on the screen and unique capabilities and all that stuff. It was probably the emergence of wireless carriers and the phone as a target type. It was that, you know, just that additional extra flavor of stupidity being added into the mix that made everything just terrible.
Yum, yum.
And they were never going to win the mobile wars. Never. It was just never going to happen. But I recount this story in this article, and I might have told this on the podcast sometime in the past, but the most incredible meeting I've ever had, I think, with Microsoft was with the Windows Mobile guys. And it was after the iPhone had come out. And I'm typing on my laptop like I always do as they speak. And I said, look, it really seems like the iPhone is eating your lunch. I mean, how are you going to respond to that? And I'm typing as the woman is responding. And she says, you know, the iPhone proved something we've thought for a long time, that consumers would really embrace a simple, easy-to-use touch system. And as she's saying this, I sort of slowed down and stopped, and then I considered this, and I said, do you even hear the words that are coming out of your mouth?
Oh, that's so mean.
I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible. I couldn't help it. You know, you saw this coming and you didn't do it? Is that that's what you're claiming? That's incredible. And, you know, the thing, you know, Windows Phone is a tough one for me, because when Steven Sinofsky took over the Windows group, the big Windows group, a lot of the former guys from Windows, the guys who were there in the XP days and the Windows Vista days, fled that ship. And a lot of them ended up in Windows Mobile. And I had conversations with multiple people from Microsoft who were friends of mine who said, oh, yeah, I'm working on Windows Mobile now. And 201, I replied something along the lines of, oh, are you getting punished for something? I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, you know, going to Windows Mobile seemed like such a horrible thing. And none of them told me anything about Windows Phone, but all of them did hint that they were working on something they thought was going to be big and that I should pay attention to this. It was going to be great. And as we all know, in February, March 2010, they announced Windows Phone at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. And I was blown away by it. It seemed like a real reimagining of what a smartphone could be, not just different to be different, right? But let's really think through how this could work and make it better at every step along the way. I really felt like these guys had gotten it right. Now, it's a completely different story. Obviously, this thing didn't go very far for a variety of other reasons. But Windows Mobile, you know, back in the day, Windows Mobile 6, whatever, no. it was never going to happen. In a world of companies like RIM and BlackBerry, it was never going to happen. In a world of companies like Google and Apple, that is the saddest joke ever told. Yeah. Never going to happen.
I think one of the things that former employee talked about on the article he did was Microsoft kept going back and forth between, should we focus on the enterprise or consumer? Right. They couldn't figure out that they should do both or how to do both. With Windows Mobile, it was an enterprise play. When Windows Phone launched, it was all consumer, and they just forgot about the enterprise, which is where they had market share. Now they're swinging back again to enterprise, and they're kind of just saying, well, we lost in consumer, right?
Yeah, Monday morning quarterbacks are going to look at Windows Phone and do look at Windows Phone, and they've come up with a variety of reasons why it failed. And the thing you just said, I think, is the kind of heuristic center of it all, the nougaty, chewy center, the Apple envy that drove Microsoft during this period of time was so strong that they literally followed Apple down this consumer rabbit hole and tried to make a consumer product after they had failed with Zune. After they had failed with Windows Media Center, they still tried. And that is astonishing to me, you know, but that's that they were so
like you said, in hindsight, now it's easy to say, like, why did they do that? And at the time I remember thinking,
but you know what?
I remember even asking, like, are you guys going to add some enterprise features to this? And they're like, oh, this is for both consumer and enterprise. I'm like, it's missing every single enterprise feature you had in Windows Mobile.
Yep. To the tune of basic, at the time it was EAS support, like Exchange Active Sync support, was completely
VPN,
missing.
VPN support was missing. Right?
And it's, as the iPhone and Android improved over the subsequent years, those things were better supported by these exact things than Windows Phone was. Right. You know, we can talk about apps and all that stuff, and that's a big part of the story. We can talk about their botched plan to have these hubs that, you know, no brand would in their right mind would ever want to be, you know, have any part of and all that stuff. But this kind of bizarre focus just on the consumer experience was so dumb. So dumb. But that's Windows Phone.
I mean, you could write this article, mm-hmm. Christian Hernandez's article for BlackBerry, even bigger.
Right. If we had just done things not the way we did them, well, maybe we would have won.
BlackBerry and Microsoft misunderestimated what the iPhone was going to be and just missed
it. By the way, let's be fair. The whole world did. The whole world. Mm-hmm. And I now describe the iPhone as the meteor that destroyed Windows.
Yeah.
That's how big the iPhone is.
Yeah.
The iPhone is the single most important personal computing product of all time.
You couldn't have predicted not merely the success of the iPhone, but BYOD, the ascendance of BYOD, and how that would change the enterprise.
When the iPhone came out, it was completely clueless to business.
Right.
The reason it didn't matter is because the iPhone was desired so badly by the people who were running corporations that they went to their IT departments and said, I don't care, make this work.
Right. You know? No one could have predicted that. The IT guys, the enterprise technology companies, they all said, oh, no. You know,
this is a group of people that used to super glue USB ports so people couldn't plug iPods into them.
Right. They thought they had complete dominance. They did not.
Yeah.
As with all revolutions, the people, you know, the king and the queen just don't see the guillotine coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not unusual.
Nope.
And, we were all excited as enthusiasts, and I speak about, you know, MacBreak and Twit and all that, about the iPhone and believers early on. But that's because we were enthusiasts. I don't think anybody thought it would penetrate the enterprise. On the other hand, God, did I hate Windows Phone before. That was...
Windows Mobile.
Windows Mobile was so awful.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was awful. And I had a Windows Mobile 3.5 whatever device, and...
Yep.
And so when Windows Phone came out earlier, might have been embraced, but it was too late by the time it came out. I mean, it just was.
I will say, you know, when you think about the also-rans of this industry, you can put them in this order because the company that responded the quickest to the iPhone, well, actually it was Android. It was Google. They completely scuttled everything. They were number one. Okay.
Yep.
But number two was actually Palm and WebOS.
Right.
They move so quickly to do something iPhone-like that they literally put themselves out of business. They ran out of money.
Well, but that's an example of a company also that you could write this article about. There's company that owned that space,
mm-hmm.
the glass touch space.
Yep. And I owned many, many, many Palm devices.
My Palms.
Many Palm devices. And Spring devices.
They were even Sony closer. Devices. They were far closer than BlackBerry or Windows, and they fumbled it.
Yeah. Microsoft would come after that, right, with Windows Phone. And you know, the delta between the iPhone and Windows Phone is about 2.5 years. It doesn't sound like that long in retrospect.
Is it that old? Wow.
Yeah. Well, 2007, right, to 2010.
That's amazing.
And then, of course, BlackBerry was last. And we all saw how that went.
Boy,
so
that just shows you. You could, by 2.5 years, you could have you could lose the race. That doesn't seem even possible. That's a valuable lesson. Look at Uber. That's a valuable lesson.
Yep. And it also is a valuable lesson about the future of Windows Phone, right? So everybody's like, of course Microsoft's done. They're not going to do another phone. I think they're just waiting for the next cycle. You know, like
there
if they're going to come back.
Next cycle.
No, well, you know what? They're 2.5 years
may not
from
be
now.
A phone. Right. That's
or 2.5 years from now. Will Apple still
even
have
Apple
the
is looking for a replacement for the iPhone? The iPhone is a unicorn, not the billion-dollar sense, but in a unique sense. It's a pixie. Mm-hmm. It's an aberration. Right. These things don't happen that often.
And by the way, Apple fell for that same thing we were talking about earlier. The iPad, the iPad Mini.
Yeah.
None
of that really did anything.
These things are all, you know, what, we're going to make two iPhones. Three iPhones. You know, this is what happens, you know.
Yep.
There's no magic number two.
You know,
it is as good.
The other thing is, as Paul and I both know, because we've covered Microsoft for so long, part of the reason Microsoft succeeds in certain markets isn't because they have the best product or the best idea. Their competitors stumble sometimes.
Sure.
And that gives them a tiny opening, and then they run with it. I mean, that's what let them catch up to Sony for a while in gaming consoles. Then they lost that again, but
right. You're talking, so for the first half or so of the 360 generation, they were beating the PS3 pretty strongly.
Right.
You know, Sony themselves had come out of nowhere and beat Nintendo, and that was a big deal. It looked like Microsoft was going to beat the PlayStation in that generation, and as it turned out, they didn't. By the time it was over, the PlayStation 3 had somehow outsold the Xbox 360. I don't quite understand how that works, but I guess that's what happened. And now this generation, you know.
Gaming was, for a long time, console gaming was notoriously volatile. I think it settled down. And I hate to say it, but when I talk to gamers, it's not even close. I mean, Microsoft is your grandfather's gaming platform.
Wow.
No, I'm not kidding.
Leo, I listen.
It's the old man system. It's the people. And they go, oh, yeah, of course, Leo, you would have an Xbox.
I'm sorry. Every month I gather up the street with a bunch of gentlemen who are 50 years old or older. And I take great exception to what you just said.
PlayStation owns this market. You talk to anybody under 50 or 40.
I don't quite get it. I have to be honest. And
I think there's a hair's difference between them. I don't see the difference. But
yeah, I don't quite get it. Right. Like why there would be, you know. Comparing these two consoles, I think to myself, they're very close.
Absolutely.
And the Xbox has certain advantages. The voice control stuff, I think, is incredible. The Sony has certain advantages as well. But
I fought this for years, really, because I really loved that Xbox One. I loved the Kinect. And I really thought it was a superior platform. But I finally recognize every time I talk to some younger person, younger than me, which is everybody, it's not even it's perception. I admit it's more perception than anything else. But and of course tomorrow Sony has a big event, cleverly timed to coincide with Apple's event.
Yeah, I think Sony actually.
Could there be a worse run company than Sony?
Well, right. And by the way, that going into this generation of consoles, that was part of my rationale for thinking the Xbox would have beaten the PlayStation 4. That how could anybody be faithful to this company? They can't get anything right. And man, they really got it right with the PlayStation 4. I don't know how it happened.
I mean, do you think Scorpio will bring any of the luster back?
Well, that's Paul's position. Paul's contention is that it's still anybody's game because in the past consoles have been.
It's kept Mary Jo's her contention.
My conviction.
My contention is. In this case, it is now actually officially over. These are the last consoles, by the way, I think.
Yeah. So, Right. Coming in number two is not a problem. If, you know, if Sony sells 80 million business. And Microsoft yeah. sells 70 million, that's yeah. fantastic.
Still a good business.
The problem is if they sell half or less than half or a third or whatever it is, you know, at that point, you know, we'll see it. You know, I don't know if the Xbox One generation is somehow profitable, which I don't believe actually happens very often with consoles, period. I don't know. I guess you can make the argument to keep going, but I think it's like diminishing returns on movie sequels. You know, at some point, you know, Police Academy 17 isn't funny anymore. Mm. I know it's hard to believe.
That's stunning, but
that's a stunning comparison.
It is. Yeah, it is. No, you know, I think the thing that Microsoft still has in its favor is its size. And the ability to kind of play the long game in a lot of these markets, like they can wait out a generation and still have the money to come back at it if they decide to do that. Just like Surface Phone, right? Like if it comes out next year, we still aren't 100% sure it will, but they are just kind of doing a wait and see right now. And
they have the
ability.
The other thing that plays into that is Microsoft's diversity, right? Microsoft is the type of company who will, in the future, have an announcement that will read something like the following. Next blockbuster PlayStation 5 game, or whatever they're calling it, will use Azure on the back end. You know, there'll be some version of a No Man's Sky type game that requires this incredible computation power and yada, yada, yada. And Microsoft will be powering that stuff on the back end. And I think that's not just where their true strength lays. I think that's important, but I also think that's the type of company that Microsoft is. They would work with Sony, you know, and so, you know, we might call them an also-ran or whatever in the game market. I don't think that's where they're at at all, but, you know, they could be losing to Sony in this market perhaps, and they would still work with them, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, just like Nintendo now and Sega now, right? Work with everybody.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, those guys had a kind of be beaten into that position, but yes.
Well, I'm sure Microsoft's not going happily.
No, but Microsoft isn't a game maker only, right?
Right.
You know, in other words, Sony or Sega and Nintendo, that's basically all they were doing. And so for Sega, for example, to exit the console market, that's actually kind of a big deal. That could have been the end of the company. Kind of like it was really for Atari, you know.
Yeah. Mm. They're still around. Ironically, they're still around.
No, I know, but it's sort of.
I think they have
like
an announcement tomorrow. Actually,
oh, good.
you know, sort of like a you know what? Right, so I know that Apple and Sony have an announcement. I didn't realize that Dell has a big announcement tomorrow.
You know what I think that is?
Talk about
that Dell announcement. I think that is just Dell and EMC completing their merger.
Oh, okay, a new dawn, September 7th. And they even have a countdown clock, 20 hours, 41 minutes, and 51 seconds left.
Let me get some advice from you. I want to cover a live event tomorrow on Twitter. Should it be the Apple event?
I think it should be Dell.
The Dell event. Yeah, you think
Dell, it's the biggest,
you know,
the biggest merger in tech history, people. Just saying.
It is
as
a
your
big
enterprise
story.
Representative.
It's a big
here.
Story. So that's what you think that's what's going to be EMC acquisition finalized. Did they have to go through regulatory approval on that?
I believe they did.
Huh. It just slid right in there.
Yeah. Well, and I think they want to make a big deal. Right. And yeah, they want to make it a really big deal. Biggest tech merger. Why they did it again, you know, revisit that whole thing. I think that's what it's going to be.
Will the financial and enterprise tech press cover it then because they aren't covering Apple's iPhones?
Leo, this is the first time I heard of this event. So
Mary Jo knew
it's possible. Possible.
Yeah. All the business press knows about the Dell event.
We'll see it on Squawk Box. You know, they'll be talking about it.
Yeah, you will.
We'll be making the rounds on Yammer.
I mean, maybe they'll announce other things too, like some products based on the merger, whatever. But I mean, I think that's expected
on the day
to be
that enterprise storage became a commodity, we'd like to announce our biggest ever acquisitions of the enterprise storage company.
So people are yelling me in the chat room because I said something, I guess it's controversial, that this is the last generation of consoles. I'll throw this at you. And of course, I'm you know, it's stupid to predict anything in this world because everything changes.
It
but console generations are long, you know, 5-10 years. And so we still have some life left in both the Xbox and the PlayStation 4. I think we're probably thinking 5 years off before the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox One mm-hmm. point or Xbox 2. There'll be these refreshes as we're seeing this year and next year. But I don't see them saying, do you see an Xbox 2 or a PlayStation 5 in a few years?
So I think it's a little too early to say, but I think the thing that will define future generations will be that thing that OnLive was on to a few years ago,
streaming.
But maybe we're there too early. Yeah. And I think that back end stuff becomes more important. You know, maybe that's where Microsoft kind of wins, even if it's not an Xbox branded thing that everyone is using, that we should be able to do really high quality gaming online.
I also think that in the 5 years, it could be HoloLens. The platforms may change quite a bit. Mm-hmm. With Neo and Scorpio, you get enough. It buys you time. You get a few more years. Those are refreshes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you just get a few more years. That's all.
So, Leo, let me ask you a question. Have you played a UHD Blu-ray on your Xbox One S yet?
Yeah.
Have you noticed? It's beautiful, obviously.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I had to buy a TV to see it.
Yeah, and had to buy discs for the first time in a few years as well. Because there is no other way to get this content. So, okay, fine. So, like, The Revenant is a great example of a beautiful movie. Looks great on a big screen at 4K. It's incredible. We got Deadpool as well. Man, does that thing run like a jet engine. Right? I can play Xbox One games on this thing all day long, no problem. No issues with sound or fan noise or whatever. But when you play a disc.
Really? Oh, I haven't heard that.
The whole time.
I haven't paid attention to that. I have it turned up loud, so I might not be hearing this.
Well, so you'll notice it when the movie's over, when you just turn the sound off.
Yeah.
Then things just sitting there for 15 more minutes just going to
time.
It's
a lot of processing. 4K is a lot
of
bandwidth.
Right, 4K is big. VR does this as well, right? People who have like the Galaxy VR solution, whatever that is called, have seen the hot phone thing, right? Where you're doing VR with your phone and it becomes so hot that it shuts down. You know, these are problems that these guys have to overcome for this next generation stuff. You know, for games to really get beyond 1080p essentially and to have holograms or have virtual reality, they really need to be a lot more impressive from a hardware perspective than today's devices are. And I think that's a big stumbling block as well.
Yeah. I just think gaming, the experience of gaming is going to change. These are such long life cycles these consoles have. I don't know. I could be wrong. We could see
I just want to play laser tag.
Oh, we did that on Saturday with we played a lot. It was fun. There's this guy anyway, it was on the new screensavers. It was a lot of fun.
Is that true? You actually did it over the weekend?
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. This is actually, sometimes it's nice not to have a lot of news and just kind of get to talk a little bit about philosophy, prediction, speculation.
Yep.
But we've left Mary Jo out for a while. So let's get her back.
Bring me back. Bring me back.
Let's have a conversation about what it would take for Mary Jo to buy an Xbox. What would it take?
Oh, I can't even imagine what it would take.
Sounds as frivolous as it sounds. That's actually an interesting question because is gaming just limited as it is now really to the adolescent boys in us all, or is there a gaming that is more universal?
Don't all the stats say women are the majority of at least casual
gaming is different, right. And that's exactly right.
But
so
actually,
gamers see themselves as a different breed entirely. Yeah. They don't think Candy Crush is a game
thing that I think could apply to anybody. So, the game Firewatch is an interesting example. I talked about this months ago when I played it on the PlayStation 4. It's coming out on the Xbox One this month. This is the game I've literally considered taking my wife and daughter and sitting them in front of the TV and saying, play through this for 5 or 10 minutes and see if you don't want to see it through, right? Mm-hmm. My wife and I watch a lot of like European crime procedural TV shows and stuff on Netflix or whatever, and they're kind of engaging on whatever level. And I feel like this game and others like it kind of fills that role but is interactive, like you're doing it. And my wife and daughter are two people who
– So it's more like a TV, kind of an interactive TV show. It's more like an immersive drama kind of a
– Yeah, I think they would get hooked by the story because honestly, in this particular game, it's not a Call of Duty game, obviously. It's great character actors doing the voices. It's a compelling plot. And really, the storyline kind of really grabs you.
What if like there was like Downton Abbey, but it were more interactive, and you could be you could go into VR or HoloLens, and you're actually living there. Maybe you're even a character in the story. Mary Jo, would that be compelling?
Yell at your footman.
Footman.
So I'm not a good person to ask because I don't even care about TV anymore. So I'm a very small segment of the population.
Well, I mean, certainly there are a lot of people, and unfortunately, I feel myself moving into that category who just can't bring ourselves to sit in front of a screen and play
another
a game.
Another screen. That's me.
Yeah, for hours at a time. Yeah, it's just I want to do something, right?
I want to get out of here. I know.
The weird thing for me is I've been a game player my entire life. I was of the first generation that had video games as a kid, you know. And it's funny, I wrote an article, I haven't published yet, about tablets, but I got into this a little bit. I've tried and I just don't care about games on phones and tablets, you know, for the most part. There are a couple of things I'll put on there, like a crossword puzzle thing or something like that. But I have tried and tried.
You don't like PC gaming either, do you?
Really? Oh, yeah. He likes PC gaming.
Well, I mean, I sort of came up in PC gaming and have switched to console gaming. But I guess it's the same thing.
That's the same thing.
Yes. The style of game I would play on either would be the same.
You can play Call of Duty on a PC. It's just a controller difference in how you're sitting, whether you're lean back or lean forward. But essentially, those are the same. So I do think you're either a casual gamer or you're I don't want to say serious gamer, but let's say serious gamer.
Yeah.
Or you're not a gamer at all.
Right. And you're just not interested in it.
I watch TV because...
Why are you dead inside?
I look for... Because I'm dead inside. Because I'm looking... But I will only be engaged in a television show where the writing and the acting and the story is really compelling. Yeah. Right. And it's like a movie.
By the way, that's why I mentioned the European stuff. There's a lot of British especially, but there's even some French stuff and Welsh stuff that's on Netflix that is... I just think of a higher quality than the typical. Obviously, we have stuff on HBO and some of the cable channels. It's very, very good. You know, the Breaking Bad level shows. We do have some of that stuff.
But as far as like, some good stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's just like going to the theater would be good stuff. It's a, it's a storytelling. And you know, I mean, Mary Jo, you have other things you want to do.
Yeah.
But I think that's different from watching, network television or sitcoms too.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
I can't bring myself to watch that. Are you kidding me?
No.
I can't tell you how many times people have said to me I should watch The Big Bang Theory because they're nerds.
I hate that show. It was terrible. It's on in reruns so much you can't avoid
horrible,
it.
Unfunny TV show.
It is unfunny.
It's awful.
You know what, Paul?
He made a Star Trek reference. It's hilarious. No, it's not. It's
terrible.
I have
the same reaction to that.
Yeah, I really hate it.
Isn't that funny? Well, anyway, I don't know where we're going with this because we're basically alienating our audience.
I don't know what could ever make me like gaming. I don't really know.
Well, does it have to be gaming, though? What if it was, you know,
something
this
I could do on Xbox that wasn't a game?
Something, yeah. I don't know.
Like, you know, Skyping... on a big platform, you know, TV, Xbox, that's kind of interesting. If you have like family Skyping kind of things you want to do.
But you don't even have it.
What do you do for a hobby?
What do you do when you're in a 17-hour flight?
Do you knit? What do you do? I mean.
No. I make beer. I drink beer. I walk. I take architectural tours of New York. I live in New York City,
my friend. Oh, good. Architecture. Okay. No. We just found something.
What do you do when you have downtime?
What if you could take architectural tours? How about this? Of 17th century Paris in an environment that felt almost like you were there.
Exactly. Maybe. Thank you. That would be amazing.
Time travel, maybe.
I mean.
Maybe. Maybe.
I feel like that's. Gaming is good. The next level of gaming is not going to be a first-person shooter.
It's a cafe thing I was talking about.
Because it's, where can you go with what we've got? I mean, you can make it more realistic.
There's an audience. Right. Yeah. And
you could go to Paris right now, go to the Bastille, which was that big prison where, that everyone was freed during the revolution. There's nothing there. There's a line in the ground. That's all you can see.
It'd be amazing. But imagine if you could go
were there virtual and the thing kind of filled up and there it was. And
July 16th, 17, whatever. That would be amazing. Right?
That'd be pretty interesting. That'd be way more interesting to me than any kind of current gaming kind of thing.
Right.
Although Call of Duty's pretty good, Mary Jo.
I watch Minecraft.
My nephew play shooter games, and I'm like, I can't even understand.
I don't want to kill people. I'm done with that. It's too violent.
And then while he's playing, you see my name flash across the screen because I'm actually in the game with him.
It's too violent. But I love Minecraft. And there's a little violence. There's a little bit of challenge because there are bad guys,
shoving
but they're easy.
Into a hole.
Yeah, they're easy to avoid. It's not really, but it's mostly a building game.
Right.
Well, mostly
that is pretty cool.
It's smart,
Yeah. No, there are things like that, like
puzzles,
kinds of
maybe?
Out-of-body experience type things that I can see being interesting. Cooking shows and that kind of stuff I kind of find interesting and could make it even more interesting if it was more like experiential.
There you go.
Type.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Cooking would be a good...
But for the most part, I really do feel like I don't want to sit in front of a screen any more than I have to because I do it all day long.
You know what? It's really interesting because I think that's the same thing for me because I just burn out. And so yesterday, what did we do on Labor Day? We bought a wooden jigsaw puzzle and worked on that. We played a board game called Smash Up with Michael, the three of us. It's a cardboard game. And there's something more pleasant about real people. And
you're so analog, Leo.
Well, and then we watched a movie. We watched Unforgiven.
Watch it on Beta Cam or something?
We watched it on
did
the TV.
Did
we
get the real thing going?
But that was a whole day off where we didn't do anything, a lot of analog stuff, taking walks. Yeah. I wonder if as a society, maybe I'm just getting older. That's probably most.
No, I think there's something to this. This is like the good food movement, the craft beer movement.
Yeah.
We're starting to reject this technology stuff.
We want something different.
Well, and realizing the benefits of certain things. Like, for example, they've proven or have studies have shown that handwriting on paper, there's a mind connection there that makes you remember that thing better than when you type it.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Does it work with a surface if I'd use the stylus?
No, I guess it's no, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
There's something about the
I have to use a pen and paper?
About paper, yeah.
I should my handwriting
I've
has
heard
gone
that
to
before
hell.
Too.
No, mine has too. I can't even write a check. Yeah. I had to fill out savings bonds the other day. Like, I thought I was gonna die.
$1 I can't. It's like
I
my
like
hand
$128 out of this, and I think I destroyed my hand for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Whoa, what a world. Who would ever thought we'd get to this point?
I had beautiful handwriting when I was young, too.
Did you?
And my kids never even learned handwriting. They can print.
They don't learn anymore.
What? They don't teach handwriting anymore? What?
A lot of schools, they don't. A lot of schools.
Do they teach typing?
Yes.
They better.
Yeah, you have to know how to type. There are a lot of people who believe that even printing is going to go by the wayside.
Wow.
It's just an unnecessary skill. It's like learning how to make an awl so you can... cut, do something with wood or whatever. I mean, it just doesn't, it's not a modern skill.
Wow. It's really interesting. This is the only reason why I don't want to die. Otherwise, I'm happy. Literally the only reason.
Well, that and the pain.
Yeah, no, I just, after a while, you're done and, but I'm really curious what's going to happen. 50 years from now, where I will be gone for sure.
Sure.
I don't think I'm living to 109. I really wonder what my kids, when they're my age, will be doing.
Yeah.
They're not going to, I doubt they'll sit on a couch and watch. Maybe they will. I don't know.
Well, your kids will probably be able to grab a stray hair from one of your combs and bring you back.
I hope so. Say, Dad, you were wondering? Well, this is what we're doing now.
You'll purposely jump off of a cliff.
Skyping from beyond.
Yeah. That's the only thing I would love
to
know.
What was the afterlife like? All I could hear was that freaking Skype sound the whole time.
That would be horrible.
Oh, so you were in hell then.
It's not just your kitchen. Your coffin is ringing. But isn't that why we read science fiction, is to kind of speculatively imagine what might happen, what the future might be like. I think we're really – here's probably people feel this, but I feel like we're on the cusp of a really massive change over the next 50 years that is almost unpredictable. And that hockey stick effect. And I really would love to see, just peer into that future and just see what it could be. A horrible dystopia. I mean, it's unknown. It's unknown.
Yeah. I hope people just don't forget how to unplug, because
I hope they don't forget how to tie their shoes.
I know. But you know, when you're compelled not to use your phone for a few days, if you can even imagine that, it's happened to me. When I went to Japan, I didn't use a cell phone for 2 weeks.
Oh, and I got to try that.
At first, you have this really weird, like, oh, my God, how am I going to live? And then by the end, you're like, I never want to pick up my cell phone again.
Right? Should I? All right. So I'm going away for 2.5 weeks. Should I leave my phone and my laptop? What if I did that?
I know.
That's insane.
You might have a really awesome experience.
Like just actually experience where I am instead of...
Yep.
But how would I Instagram and tweet? And...
No.
It would be okay.
Listen, don't do this. Because the problem with what she's describing is when you get back. Because for the other 50 weeks of the year... You have to do what you always do, and it's so hard coming back from that. You never want to come back. When I go, if I take a week off or actual vacation, it takes me another 2 weeks just to reacclimate myself to my normal schedule. Mm. You know, I think you should tone it down, and that's really healthy. And spend like this thing you were describing over the weekend is a great day.
Oh, so fun! You know,
do some of those.
So nice.
You know, but
I have to tell you, in the interstices, I always had my phone, and you know, I mean, I'm talking about cold turkey leaving it behind. Like,
that's crazy talk. And could I speak to your wife, please?
maybe I could talk. Oh, wow.
Now, when I went to Vietnam, I kept up with my email. Like, you know, every few days I check my email, but I definitely used, I didn't have a phone with me that worked. So I just was.
Yeah, you didn't have a choice.
You know what's funny? I hadn't even contemplated this. I didn't even. You've put a seed in my mind. I would never have even thought of this.
It might make you either.
But Paul's got a point.
Like, flip out when you come back.
I'm going to come back and say, I'm retired. Goodbye.
Hey, Leo, come back.
Nope. Yeah. Not gonna do it.
I know.
Yeah. What the what? Oh, what an interesting idea.
I don't know. I think you could structure things.
Don't tell
things.
Lisa that I suggested this. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I could do it. And I think my fear is more of what Paul's saying, which is that I would enjoy it so much I wouldn't want to go back.
That's what's happened to me. You know, what was it like for you when you came back? I mean, so you were gone for 2 weeks. It was kind of freeing.
It was
then
freeing.
You had to, you know.
You come back and then you're like, okay, I'm just going to like flush my email folder because I'm never going to catch up.
No way.
And then... you just kind of jump back in where and don't try to catch up all historically with what you didn't.
Well, see, that's the problem is the day I get back, I've got to do, you know, TWIT. I mean,
I know, a show, right?
I guess what I could say is, hey, what happened while I was gone? And just stop and just listen and go, really?
And you know, one thing it does do, it makes you realize how much of the minutiae that we focus on does not matter.
It's true minutiae. It's trivial.
It really, it's like when you come back, you're like, oh, like two things happened that I should actually care about instead of like obsessing every day over every little thing that happens.
I'm going to be seeing Notre Dame. I'm going to be seeing the Louvre. I'm going to be seeing the Hermitage. I'm going to be seeing,
I don't see you posting it on the Facebook, though, did you actually see those things? Because I could say that I'm going to be seeing those things, you know?
Oh, wow. I've been ordering USB hubs and special carrying cases so I can get my iPad Pro.
I'm actually shipping gadgets to locations I'm going to be at in the future.
Yeah, batteries.
Register at all. If you were away and came back, and Apple has a phone without a headphone jack, you'd be like, who cares?
I already don't care, to be honest.
And you'd care even less. Just saying.
You are the devil, Mary Jo.
I am the devil.
And Paul is the angel, and you're on my shoulders.
Paul always says, finally. Paul always says to me, I'm un-American because I don't have a TV and I don't like gaming. So
I went, when the kids were young, we didn't have a TV. We went through maybe a 10-year period without a TV. And I didn't miss it at all.
Mary Jo, if you can't afford one, I have.
Yeah.
TVs. Like, we can bring one to New York. No, you just don't. I mean, you're out all the time. You do.
You live in the city. See, if you lived in Petaluma, you would get a TV because there's nothing.
You're like a tourist in New York. Like you, except that you live there.
That's why I would want to live in New York. You can go out every night. You see a jazz club, a concert, anything.
You can do something every minute of the day.
If I go outside, I'll see a skunk.
You don't. Yes, exactly. Mary Jo doesn't need a TV because she's. I mean, as we said, you look out your window. There's somebody jumping off a building. There's drama around you at all times.
Every moment.
Yep. You're living where they make the TV shows.
That's right.
Yeah, a big day around here is like when one of the cats traps an ant.
I would. I still hope that Lisa and I keep batting back and forth the idea of spending 5 years in New York.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. What I'm actually kind of in the back of my head hoping is that some big media company comes along, buys Twit, and said,
right,
you got to move to New York. I'm sorry, but you got to move to New York for 5 years.
You have to, because that's where all the shows are.
Yeah. And I'd go, oh, yep. Rats. Okay.
I have a similar hope, but I hope that it's that someone just sends me to live in Paris, and I can't explain why
Paris,
that would happen.
That's our next. After New York, then we move to Paris.
I can't
explain
why.
And then
the
south of France, because we need a little quiet. And then Rome or maybe Florence.
Barcelona.
Barcelona. It's beautiful, baby. Ibiza.
Be nice.
Yeah. And just my luck, they'd buy me and move me to L.A. I have to live
Las Vegas.
Oh, even God. Worse. Way worse.
That's the... Yep. Here's the good news on Las Vegas, though. They do have good restaurants. Mary Jo knows
That's
this.
That's true.
And
good
they
shows.
Have
New York has.
Good shows.
You can see Cirque du Soleil every day.
There will be concerts that occur in Las Vegas that don't happen anywhere else in the world.
New
so,
York. I want to be in New York.
That's how you
I want to go to the jazz clubs in the West Village. I want to have a great Italian meal.
The West
in a little
Village
tiny...
of Las Vegas?
No.
The fake West Village at New York, New York Casino?
Do they have a West Village in New York, New York?
Your actual dream, sorry.
All right, I'm sorry. I just got you complete. I might do this. I'm really tempted to just say, okay, literally leave my. I'm all set. You know, I've got Sims. I've been figuring
I'm
it all out.
That I might have played a small role in this, and even more freaked that Mary Jo played the primary role in this.
I tell you, I'm
do
even
it,
living dangerously.
Do it for 1 week.
I did
do
not
it for 1 week.
Exchange my Note 7.
Oh, wow.
Because I need it for my trip. And if it burns the boat down, well, so be it.
Jeez. Keep a fire extinguisher with you at all
What's
times.
Worse than that battery exploding not in the water, Leo? can you tell me?
Ooh. Yeah, that would be bad. This actually, the reason I didn't exchange it, I'm really looking for, I'm grasping at straws. I read an article that said...
if you put toothpaste on the battery, it'll be okay?
Yeah. You read that article? No, it said that there's two different battery suppliers that Samsung used for this. They
That's
used
true.
A Chinese one and a Korean one, and that the Chinese phones, the reason they're not recalling them is because China won't let them use a Korean battery in the Chinese phones, so they used a Chinese, and those were not problematic. It was only the batteries Samsung made themselves in their own factory that were problematic. And so this article said, if you look on the back of your phone and it says made in China, you're okay.
Because you can't actually open that thing up.
No, but I know that it has the Chinese battery because it was made in China.
Are you sure about that?
No, of course not. But I'm and I'm not advocating this to the people at home. But no, I also have never had this. Isn't ever gotten really hot when charging? It's fast charging right now.
Doesn't tick at all or anything like
no,
that.
No, it seems like it's okay. and so I had actually wiped it and was going to bring it to T-Mobile, and I thought, but what'll I do when I go on a trip?
Use. Galaxy VR with that thing. I dare you.
Oh, that's a good idea. I have it right here. I'll put on the headset. It does get hot when you do that.
You'll be like, hey, Alex, could you try something for me?
Maybe just bring film cameras.
Wow. You're really What have you done?
I have
really
film cameras. Yeah. I have a bunch of film and film cameras. Wouldn't that be interesting? I'd feel like I was in 1958.
You would.
Yeah.
You could wear a special
I'll wear a costume. I wear a fedora and a tweed coat with patches on the
elbows. Good day, sir.
Yeah.
A little ascot, a cravat.
Yeah. Ah, jeez. Can you imagine getting back from this trip and going over to the Fox Photo that doesn't exist anymore or wherever you go to get photos done, and none of your pictures have come out because this film is 16 years old? And, you know, can you imagine how terrible that
Mary
would be?
Mary Jo, am I allowed to bring a digital camera?
Yeah, bring a digital camera.
Okay. I'll bring a digital camera and lots of memory because I can't take it off the camera.
Right.
There's no number of pictures you could take where this would be a problem. You should be.
I know. One memory card, 7,000 pictures.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not really an issue.
If you've taken that many pictures, you've done something horribly wrong.
You know who's going to put the kibosh on this? It's Lisa.
I do.
Yeah, of course. She's going to hear the beginning of this, and just that'll be the end of this.
we'll no longer have Windows Weekly. It'll be canceled.
I really want to. Oh, we'll do like Campfire Weekly or, you know, Real Life
Weekly.
Yeah. Real Life Weekly. What happened this week in your real life, Paul? Not much.
Did a jigsaw puzzle.
I had lunch every day. That was fun.
So just a little point on the jigsaw puzzles. All my life I've been doing cardboard ones, but we found these nice wooden jigsaw puzzles.
Yeah.
And they're amazing. They're very difficult because they're very complex. You can actually do wild patterns and stuff. Hmm. So just a little tip. that's what the show will be like.
That's all I had for today. So thanks for killing that. Kind of just blew that out of the water.
Let's talk about Bing and Office. Applications and services. Mary Jo Foley, you're on.
Still doing predictions. So the rest of this year for Office and Bing, we know of a few things that are coming up. Ignite is going to be the big show, we think, for this, which is end of September in Atlanta. And I think there we're going to hear a lot more about, you know, kind of what Microsoft's been doing with hybrid around SharePoint, some of the things they're doing around making Office apps smarter and stickier. We've seen a little bits of that with the whole Microsoft Graph integration. And I think we'll also hear something that people are asking a lot about lately, which is what they're doing to sync up SharePoint and OneDrive for Business and how that integration and sync is going to work. I think we could hear at least some, if not all, of those things at Ignite.
Oh, and you're going to be there, too. We're going to broadcast from Ignite.
We're going to be there. That's right. September 28th, we'll be there doing Windows Weekly from Ignite. So we'll be covering this in depth. Also, more on bots. You know how Microsoft's been talking more and more about how you build bots with the bot framework and how they're using the intelligence that they've collected with Bing to make the bot smarter. There's been rumors around Microsoft doing its own concierge bot, which could be like your Bing personal assistant, kind of a sister or brother to Cortana kind of thing. Big brother, big sister, or small brother, small sister. All these things are just kind of a continuation of the theme of machine learning, artificial intelligence, making things smarter, making things stickier, using kind of the built-in smarts that Microsoft has with Bing to inform and infuse other apps that they have. So I think we'll see a continuation of that. The watchword for this group for Office and Bing is collaboration. Anything that is about productivity, collaboration, teams, making things more oriented towards teams are all big themes for this group. In fact, while the show's been on, MS Power user just posted a story saying there's something in development called Skype Teams that they think might be how Microsoft intends to go head to head against Slack. We've said that Microsoft thought about buying Slack. That was the rumor. But they said instead, hey, we have Skype. Why do we need to buy Slack? So this Teams functionality, this article says from MS Power User, could be what they're doing with Skype to try to compete with Slack. So I'm thinking we're just going to hear more and more of this whole collaboration, productivity, bots, all those themes will come out more as the rest of the year goes on for applications and services. Questions, comments, people?
I'm sorry, what were you talking about?
What was that? Yeah.
No. Vacations without Bing Box.
Oh, yeah, that.
Can you imagine that in the future?
Do you see Office ever going the Windows 10 route and getting rid of the version numbers?
That's a good question.
Seems like they should have just done that.
In a way. I mean, although for your on-premises Office apps, you know, the ones that you can actually download and use, it does seem like you'd want a way to distinguish which version of that you're using.
Well, right. I mean, but it seems like the Office 365 folks get updates to Office 2016 or whatever pretty regularly. I mean, you could treat it like that Microsoft treats Windows. You could have different, paths or rings or whatever, and support points. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so. I hadn't even thought about that possibility, but it kind of makes sense, right? Since Office is being updated so regularly, in fact, even more frequently than Windows.
Right, exactly.
Kind of makes sense. Yeah. So I'd say that's what I'm thinking about. You have anything to add, Paul, on any of those?
No, I mean, I think that one of the side issues just with Office in particular is that we've got these monolithic legacy applications from the past, which are kind of a big deal still, and then the new stuff. And I sort of put Microsoft Garage into Office, even though it's not really, because I think the future of Office on mobile is a lot of these single-purpose, finely honed, mobile apps. And I bet over the rest of this year and next year, we're going to see a lot more of that stuff, both from Office and from Garage.
Mm-hmm. Then, should we go on to Cloud and Enterprise?
Yeah, but first, I want to revisit Leo's analog thing. No, just kidding. Yes, let's do that.
Yes. Okay. So rest of this year for Cloud and Enterprise, there are a couple of events worth pointing out. One, we've already mentioned Ignite. That's where Windows Server 2016 is going to launch. But at Ignite, there's also going to be Microsoft's first ever data science conference, which is running in parallel, I believe, with Ignite. So if you've kind of followed along with what Microsoft's doing in data science, this is where all the stuff that we all love on Windows Weekly, like data lakes, R server, Hadoop, all these things come into play. And Microsoft, as we talked about a few shows ago, they've got a data science curricula that they're now doing as a professional degree program. So there are a lot of things happening with Microsoft in data science. And Satya Nadella is going to keynote this data science conference. He also is going to keynote Ignite. But it's very significant to me that he's doing both. And I'm thinking they may have an announcement or two at the data science conference. I had gotten wind a while back of this Open Mind product, which is kind of like a Visual Studio suite for machine learning that they're pulling together. Maybe they'll announce that at the data science conference. They probably will talk up more about Power BI and SQL Server 2016, since they haven't really talked a whole lot lately about that at this conference. So I think this data science conference could be as significant, if not more so, from a new product and strategy perspective for Microsoft as Ignite. So that's September.
Have you written or talked about Raphael told me about this just yesterday, I think. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is offering a degree in data science electronically. Have you seen this?
I did write about that.
Oh, that's interesting.
You did, I'm sorry.
Like, are they sponsoring some MOOC or...
I think it's like an edX-based
edX
course.
Yep. It is. They announced this at the partner show. That they're going to have. This is the first of a number of degree kind of credential programs that they're offering. And data science is the first one they're offering.
Yeah, so this could be maybe seen as a new take on, the Microsoft certification stuff from the past.
Yes. That's what a lot of people are saying.
An employer would see this as a recognizable skill. And mm-hmm. would perhaps hire you in part because you have this.
Right. Yes. So, I think that's very significant, this whole data science and where they're going with that and kind of how they're playing that up as something that differentiates Microsoft and something they want their partners and their customers to pay a lot of attention to. October 11th, the day after the date that the bookies are taking bets on for the hardware launch... is when Microsoft is, as far as we believe, is going to launch Dynamics 365. So what that is ERP in the cloud. It's Microsoft pulling together three different products that they have now, Dynamics AX, Project Madeira, and Dynamics CRM Online together into this new suite that's very much like Office 365, but it's called Dynamics 365. So that we think will be announced on October 11th. And the first piece of it, which is the small business piece, will ship in the fourth quarter. And the rest of it will be more of a next year kind of thing. Another event that happens every November, and I think this year will also be in November here in New York, is called Microsoft Connect. That is a developer event. So I'm thinking we'll hear more about the next version of Visual Studio, which I'm betting could be Visual Studio 2016 and come out this year. Things like VS Core, .NET being open source, all those kind of things come up at this conference. And I think we'll hear more about Microsoft's Linux love and .NET and open source love. All those things will come out in this November event. I don't know what the dates are, but I bet it'll be probably when we're in Amsterdam, Paul, I bet.
Yep, it looks like it's that week, yeah.
I know, it always feels like we missed that event because we're away. I've been once. That's kind of what's going on with cloud and enterprise. You know, Microsoft adds so many cloud services to Azure constantly. It's kind of like what they do with Office 365. There's always new things going into preview and beta. They're adding tons of new services all the time. It's almost too much to keep up with, but I think they'll just continue along that pace, add more things in Azure, continue to scale out with Azure, make it even bigger, more global. There'll probably be even more Linux adoption on the virtual machine side, because right now, one out of every three VMs on Azure are Linux. And I think that momentum will just continue and go forward. They're doing a lot of things around partnerships with open source companies in the Azure space, and I think that will continue too. So I think Azure and the Cloud and Enterprise Division, just more of the same. Just keep pushing going forward. That's my roadmap for the rest of this year.
There you go. You know, I was thinking why it's so slow this week, and obviously Labor Day, but also, and one of our chatters is a Microsoft employee. Mm-hmm. He says they're working like crazy to get ready for Ignite.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Ignite's 3 weeks away. Yeah. So
I know, suddenly.
Is it going to be a big deal? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think there'll be a lot of, it's typical, you know, Ignite is what used to be tech ed, basically, right? And that used to be more of a show for people who had, it wasn't like a news event. It was more of a show for people who had products already shipped from Microsoft who needed the education about the products.
Right.
But with Ignite, that kind of changed last year, and it became more of a news event.
Interesting.
So I think this year, it'll be more newsy too.
Yeah, I mean, it's still business focus primarily. There's some developer stuff.
Oh, okay. But when a hush falls over Microsoft, you got to figure it's something.
It's either December or something
like that. But I mean, this is.
I know.
Yeah.
A lot of people are away from Microsoft in August, too. Not everybody, but many teams are kind of on a lighter schedule in August. So this week is kind of the ramp back.
They're getting back up to speed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or there's a big announcement coming.
I know. And it's hidden. Maybe.
It's possible.
You never know.
It's compossible. So if I leave all my gadgets behind, I'm just realizing I can't listen to audiobooks. I'm going to have to bring a physical book with me. Is that what you did, Mary Jo?
You can bring a CD player and bring an audiobook on CD.
I do have an iPod. That's practically useless. And I
brought
put the
my Kindle.
On that. Yeah, something to read, right?
Yeah, I brought a lot of stuff on a Kindle.
Okay, maybe I'll do that. I have a Paperwhite.
I feel very strongly that this idea is...
You've registered your protest.
I like this idea. I think you will be surprised how much more relaxed you feel.
No, I think I will. And I won't miss anything because I'll be paying attention.
Especially on that flight when all you'll be paying attention to is the fact that the time is never moving forward.
I know.
Well, yeah, that's hard. True. But I'll have a good book.
I hope the font size is good because you won't be changing it, Leo.
I have.
You'll be sitting there with your giant magnifying glass.
I have a in my man bag here, which is normally filled with technology.
Legos.
I could bring Legos.
He's got his keys on a chain like a biker.
Yeah, I know. You know why? Because it's more like a jailer. Look at the size of that keychain.
Yeah, really.
It's crazy. No, I think I have something in here that I could take this with me. This is a 160 gig iPod. I can load that up with audiobooks. And this, I can't tweet or Instagram or anything. This is pretty harmless. I'll
probably play a couple of stupid games on there still.
Yeah, there are some pretty stupid games. If I, you know what, that would be sad if I like him now playing Snake on an iPod.
This is the level to which you've fallen.
I'm so desperate. Give me some Snake. That would be so sad.
Oh, man, it would.
So sad. It's like a junkie jonesing.
We're going to find out that Leo bought like a $3,000 Russian laptop because he couldn't stand it anymore.
I need a laptop.
And all he does is really make mistakes because the keyboard layout's so screwed up.
The first couple of days was so disorienting because I kept, like, every once in a while I'd be like, where's my phone? And then I'd be like, oh, wait, I don't have it.
You didn't even
bring
a phone.
No, I had it, but it was shut off in my suitcase.
Well, that's
so
the thing. I feel like I need to bring it just in case.
I just never turned it on. And,
To be fair, Mary Jo brings a phone to Canada, to England, and also doesn't turn it on. So,
I don't. I use Wi-Fi there. Yeah. Because
I'm
cheap.
I have a Google Fi phone, which doesn't cost anything to use internationally.
Oh, but yeah. And it's really good. Right?
I'm just thinking of carrying. That's a 6P. I'm thinking of carrying that around.
Yep.
And that way, if there's an emergency, but like just making a rule that I can't.
Like a photo emergency?
No. I'll have a camera. I'm going to bring a camera.
Yeah. Looking for directions might be okay.
Directions, or somebody can call me, or if I, you know, if I get lost and somehow lose my pants and I need some help, I could phone home.
I still feel like we're finding solutions for the wrong problems here.
Wow.
Just think about it. It is very freeing.
So is not wearing pants.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't mean you should do it.
You got a good point.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is interesting. You put in here, and I think I like this idea, and this was clearly filler.
You really ferreted into his head here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking. Sorry.
Now we're talking about the next item on the list, how you guys got in the business. And actually, I find that interesting. And you say here, and I'm thinking Mary Jo wrote this. This doesn't seem like Paul doesn't seem like the introspective type. How anyone in tech needs to reinvent themselves regularly to stay relevant. Paul wrote that. Wow, Paul. Have you been reinventing yourself?
Every day, Leo.
Paul, I rib you because I love you. You know, I have nothing but the utmost respect.
Okay. I liked it better the other way, but
I know that's why, right? Yeah, it makes you uncomfortable. I don't mean to make you uncomfortable. Hey, by the way, how do you like that new Outlook.com?
Oh, good Lord. No,
Let's just check. Let's do the check.
I already
did it. It's time for our weekly Outlook.com check.
I had a tweet today that I said, what's today's date, Outlook.com? August 37th? Because I still don't have Outlook.com.
Not surprising. You keep taunting the team.
We're going to be the last two to get it.
You guys are. You are going to be the last two.
Last two people.
What if I miss it?
Paul, you know what? You can just open a new Outlook.com account if you really want to get the new Outlook. Just saying.
I don't. This is another solution to a problem that we're not looking for here. I just want, I don't know what I want. I don't know.
What do you, tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
What I really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Now, I would like the new Outlook.com, yeah, but I'd like it on the account I actually use.
Yeah. No, we're going to hold out. We're going to say, we're going to just check every week.
Yep.
I check every day.
Maybe a next year thing. We don't know when the new target date is.
How did you guys get in the business? I think I know how you got in the business.
I got it. I'm the only one who has it.
How did you get in the business, Mary Jo?
Oh.
You were
I think you know my story.
I think
right?
I do. You were so you got out of college writing, right? In journalism. Because I interviewed you on Triangulation. We talked about this.
You did. Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to talk about this because we said we were looking ahead. Now we're going to look back. And a lot of people ask us, how did you guys get your jobs? And kind of, you know, how did that inform how you do your coverage? So I came into the business as a journalist. I still consider myself a journalist. And it's funny when people ask me to fix something or like, if I, you know, edit the registry like this, will it fix blah, blah, blah? I'm like, guys, I'm a journalist. You know, like, don't lose sight of this.
That's not me.
Yeah. Do not ask me this question. So, I got my start as a journalist and I just ended up in this business by luck, as I always tell people. I happened to get a job at a startup tech magazine. I just applied for a bunch of jobs. This was the one that looked the most appealing. I only got two offers. This was the better one of the two financially. And I took it and I told them, I know nothing about technology, zero. And they still hired me. They said, you know what? You can learn on the job. That is how I got in the business.
Because nobody, when they started, knew anything about technology.
Yeah. Although some people came in, you know, as technologists who became writers, but I started as a writer who had to learn about technology.
That's pretty much universal, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was an enthusiast first. In fact, I became a writer so that I could pay for my habit. Basically, you know, it was so expensive. Software and hardware in those days were, you know, when I say those days, I mean the late 70s was so expensive that I could support my habit writing reviews and stuff.
I know. When I bought my first computer, I bought my first PC in 1984, which was the year the PC came out, basically. Right. And I paid like almost $4,000 for it.
Yeah.
I like emptied my bank account.
Was it an IBM?
Yeah, IBM.
So it was like a PC. By then it was an AT, wasn't it? The PC came out in 81.
Yeah.
It must have been an AT.
I think it was it may have been an AT. I just bought it because I'm like, you know what? I'm writing about technology. I guess I should try to learn something about this.
Well, I'll tell you what you got with that was an awesome keyboard and about 12 and a half inches of documentation.
Yeah.
And like hard books and
An amazing steel case that was like.
Yeah. It was so solid. I moved it around the country with me for a few years and never broke.
It has thicker walls than my Tesla does.
Yes.
Yeah.
My Tesla, I tap it goes boom. Like it.
My dad had the original 5150 IBM PC, and the first PC that I built, which was a 386 SX, I tried to put it into that case just because it was so awesome.
Awesome case.
But it was never going to fit. Like
you'd have to cut it.
The skills to solder points where it could make sense or whatever. Yeah. But
neat the case. AT came out in 84.
Yeah, that was probably the one I got.
Yeah, that was that really was the first one that was like a modern PC.
Yep.
Before that,
I didn't even know how to use it or set it up. I asked somebody who I was working with. I'm like, can you come set this up at my house? And then he set it up and it was just sitting there. I'm like, oh, I guess I should read the manual. Yeah, that's exactly. That was the sound.
Sure. And Paul, you were an Amiga guy, so you were like, but your Amiga stuff was your hobby at first, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, we grew up on video games. I grew up on computers. I taught myself how to program BASIC on early computers, Commodore 64, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I went to school for art.
You're a graphic designer. That's right.
Yeah, every art award you could win in high school, and clearly I was going to go into art. And when I arrived at art school, I realized this was a great path to never ever make money. And this was pointless. And, I dropped out of school after that year, took a year off, met my wife. I was in banking.
What? Really?
Yeah. And after a couple of years of that, I was involved in various bank robberies, by the way.
Really?
At least five of them. I'm kind of losing track now. But
what?
At two different banks.
Was it like a Departed? Did they wear Nixon masks or?
I have some comical bank robbery stories, actually. I chased bank robbers out of a bank one time.
That's dumb. That's really dumb. It's not your money.
No, well, in this case, I knew they didn't have web. It doesn't matter. Okay. But the point is, I eventually went back to school for computers, which was always my hobby. And I intended to become a programmer. And, life is weird because there are these moments where before I had even started going to school full time, I got in touch with a company out in Phoenix, in this case, that was doing Unix stuff. And I could have gone on this completely different path. They ended up not hiring me because they didn't have any experience. But everyone on the team wanted them to hire me. I got along really great with all the guys, and I thought I would be good for it. And I would have traveled and supported Unix things around the country or something. It was very strange. But I ended up getting involved with a professor who got, you know, got me down the path toward writing, and started writing books first for the education market, you know, for Visual Basic and Windows and Excel and things like that. And years later, I asked him, I said, you know, I don't understand what made you think I could do this. Yeah. I had never wrote anything that he saw, and I was waiting for this great insightful comment on my life that would be some advice I could maybe give to someone else in the future. And he said, I could just tell.
Nice. It's nice when you get a kind of a mentor or a protector like that. We all have that person, I think, who
Saw
something
multiple times, maybe, you know, depending on the
thing. Yeah, me, for sure. First getting into radio and then getting into writing. Mm-hmm. For sure. There was somebody who said, you know, I see something in you.
Yeah.
It's good to have that. You're lucky to have that.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have I have the Thurrott bookshelf, as I mentioned, across from me.
You can have a lot more of them soon if you want them. I got to get rid of these things. I have so many books upstairs that we've gotten rid of most of our paper books, but a big chunk of what we have left is my stuff. And
do you do any art anymore? I know you do the great little Photoshop things for your blog.
Yeah, no, that's as close. I don't draw or paint.
You should, like, you know, I'm sure Mary Jo has a novel in her drawer.
As a teenager, I sold paintings. So arguably a professional artist. I've sold software applications, so I'm a professional programmer. I have these weird little life experiences that, you know, are long gone now. But
I'm surprised you don't draw on surface with a pen.
Or just, you know, just for fun, like of a long winter's evening.
One of the things about digital technology, I guess digital stuff, is that I always hated, as a child or, you know, younger guy, I was pretty good with, you know, pencils and things like that. Not so great with paint, but you couldn't correct very much because you would destroy the paper. And you only had so much you could do.
You had a gum eraser, but you can't, you don't want to draw a hole.
You just damage the paper and it ruins it. And I think that's one of the great things about, I saw this very early. I saw it with the first Mac was one of my first experiences with this kind of thing, and then later with the Amiga, the ability to draw digitally. I knew this was the future, and I was that right at the right time when I went to school, was right before there were computers in, you know, college level art. And today, of course, it would be all Photoshop and those kinds of tools, and that would be amazing, and maybe things would be different. But
it's analogous to what happened with writing too, right? I mean, it used to be very hard.
Totally.
Cut and paste was literally cutting and pasting.
Mm-hmm. And I did that too.
Certainly with writing, I bet you with drawing too, there's a tendency to over edit now because you can just keep on going forever and ever and ever. And that's the new lesson every writer and artist has to learn, is when to stop editing.
Yep. I was 20 years ago, 15 years ago, was convinced that the future of my job would be me speaking to my computer. And I was convinced that this would be awesome.
Right.
And I looked at so many Dragon naturally speaking type things. And
that's an example. That's why it's so hard to predict the future, because there'll be changes in 50 years, but what and where and how, we have no idea. Mm. And who would have predicted the iPhone in 1997? You know, I mean,
right.
Although you might have predicted we would have by now in our pockets a powerful computer system. You know, a very portable, highly portable, powerful computer system. And
I mean, even the notion of a portable computer was a radical idea in the early 1980s. It was foreseeable, but I don't know that we – I don't know. I don't know if I had the imagination to really see that kind of thing.
And the internet, pre-1992 or 91, the idea that the internet would be ubiquitous and even available to you as you walked down the street, that was scientific sci-fi, right?
I mean, I've probably said a version of this to you on the show or that other people have heard, but I spent tremendous hours every day, every night after work, weekends, doing things in my Amiga, which was not connected to the internet.
Right.
I have no idea what I did.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. It's a glorified calculator.
I mean, I have some idea, but today, the amount of time you can spend doing things online is what drives it. And that's true of video games as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could play video games by myself in a cave, but I like playing those games remote online with everybody else. And
even the way we do our jobs, right?
Well, look at what we're doing right now.
I know.
Who would have thought I'd be sitting on a ball wearing a fez in the middle of cow country talking to a couple of big shots in Boston and in New York over the internet, and I'd see pictures of you, and then people would except for Paul, whose Skype has just died, and then people would listen to it all over the world.
I know.
Having us having recorded it and then made it available for cheap or free download to any corner of the world.
I know. I tell people this, and I think they don't believe me sometimes. I'm like, when I started as a tech reporter, the way you would go about doing a story is you'd go to the library. You'd look up like information on companies in the library. You'd get the phone number. You'd call them. Then they'd mail you stuff in the regular mail.
Yes, remember that?
I mean, that's how I started
writing.
That's
how you get information.
Technology.
Yeah, and 6 days later, you have the answer to your question.
I know. Yeah.
So Paul has apparently, in honor of all of this, lost his internet connection.
I know. I'm like, what just happened?
Wow, is that interesting. I'll tell you what, while we're getting him back, let me do an ad. And then when we return, maybe we'll have Paul Thurrott back in the back of the book for you. I hope we do. Yes. Yeah.
Paul he's just frozen momentarily.
All right. We'll get him back. Our show today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I mean, we're talking about how the internet and technology has changed our lives, and it's every corner of our lives, including getting a home loan. Except you might not know that if you go to a conventional mortgage broker. The last time we got a home loan was only 3 years ago when Lisa and I bought our house, and the mortgage guy still had a sheaf of papers this thick that he'd printed every day with the LIBOR and the Fed and the interest rates and every bank. And it was like this big, you know, and he'd lick his thumb and run along there. It was like 19th century technology. And it is still for most mortgage lenders, except for Rocket Mortgage. And that's why Rocket Mortgage buys ads on this show, because, frankly, they know your digital generation. You're technically literate, and you don't have ain't nobody got time for that. You want to do it fast and easy without even getting up from the couch, and that's why Rocket Mortgage was created. It's from Quicken Loans, of course, the best lender in the business and the best known in the United States. They're just fantastic, and it's completely online. It's very fast. They've taken all the complicated, time-consuming paperwork out of mortgage lending. No more old files, no more boxes of documents. You can share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. You'll get approved very quickly, in most cases in minutes. Minutes! And it's going to be a product that's tailored to your particular financial situation. And you can do all of it on your smartphone, on your tablet. You don't even need to get up from the couch. It's really kind of amazing, and it's such a revolution. I want you to try it. The next time you need to refi or when you're ready to buy a new house, go to quickenloans.com/windows. quickenloans.com/windows. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. It's Rocket Mortgage. It's from Quicken Loans. At quickenloans.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Paul is back. That was funny while we're discussing how the internet has changed everything. You lost your internet.
Yep.
This
is the second time this has happened. It makes a buzzing sound. Everything freezes. And I have to just turn off the computer.
Is it the computer?
Maybe this will be my new webcam issue.
Wow.
Is it Skype or webcam or what?
I don't know.
Can you tell? No.
I don't know. I assume it's related to Skype because I always assume that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The whole thing, you know, it just bzzz and then it's yeah.
Well, Paul, why don't you kick off the back of the book here with your tip of the week?
So two Xbox-related tips. One is that you can now pre-order the first wave. It's really only three games, but first wave of Xbox Play Anywhere games. These are those games that you can buy once and play across Windows 10 PCs and tablets and Xbox One, right? And continue everything. So all of your achievements go forward, your play progress goes forward, and all that kind of stuff. So let me look at the list because I forget which the three are. But the three that you can pre-order today, and this is in the Windows Store on Windows 10, are ReCore, which is the first game that will actually ship. That one's coming out on September 13th. Forza Horizon 3, which is due on September 27th, and Gears of War 4, which is due on October 11th. And I actually bought and installed ReCore, although I don't think it installed the full game, but it's funny when you run it, it pops up for 1 sec, and then it has a like a Windows 10 style notification that says, "You're too early," which is kind of a funny way to do it. It says, "We know you really want to get started, but you'll have to wait a bit longer." So you can check.
Patience, grasshopper.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of other games that are coming out over the next several weeks and months as well. So Xbox Play Anywhere. And then I also have a quick reminder that it's the beginning of the month, and so Games with Gold is on again, and the first games, first new games of the month are available on Xbox One and 360. And not for the first time, I actually am much more interested in the 360 titles this month than I am in the Xbox One titles. So Forza Horizon on Xbox 360 is available now, and then Mirror's Edge, which is a great game, is coming at the middle of the month. So you can look for that stuff.
I didn't realize they broke it up within the month. I just assumed they were all...
Actually, it's really weird how they do it because there's a different set of dates for each of the games. So there's actually a game from last month that's still available through the middle of this month. You know, it differs between the Xbox One and the Xbox 360. You really got to pay attention to get all the games if you want them. And then App Pick of the Week. So the app, Raisin Mobile App Pick of the Week, is Instagram for Windows 10, actually. So... in other words, for Windows Mobile. That version of Instagram picks up the Stories feature, which is a pretty new Instagram feature. I've not used the Stories thing. I actually do use Instagram now, although I kind of went kicking and screaming into that. I've never tried the Stories
thing.
I've
never heard of Instagram. What is that?
Yeah, what is this Instagram?
Yeah.
It's like Veeam or Periscope. Veeam. It's one of those things.
Whatever happened to them?
I always joke with my daughter about that stuff. I'm like, you know, she'll be going out. I'll say, "Send me a Veeam later." She's like, "What?" I'm like, "This Periscope me." And she's like, "Oh, okay, idiot." You know? I just throw out like random tech names.
Veeam me.
Just an internal embarrassment. But my actual app pick of this week is actually Chrome, which is the web browser I do use. And Chrome has come under fire actually pretty much forever for performance problems, battery life problems. It's gotten kind of big and bloated and sad. Microsoft made fun of it recently with battery life in particular. Although, by the way, just today, Google posted something about battery life in Chrome. They're comparing it to old versions of Chrome, but I guess they've really been working on that. So the new version of Chrome, which just came out this week, version 53, I think it is, on Windows 10, has support for the material design look and feel, which I really like, although it's downplayed a little bit in the browser. This is true on Android too, but it's basically just flatter and kind of more modern looking. It's kind of the successor to Metro, in my opinion. I like the look of material design. It has better support for high DPI displays, which has been a problem, especially in the UI parts of Chrome. Although that's not perfect. You know, if you bring down the menus and everything, they don't really scale. But the main UI, the tabs and the toolbars and stuff, that all scales better now. And then better battery life. And so I haven't been able to test it on a laptop to figure out, and I don't even know how you would test this, but figure out how or if this thing is in fact better with the battery. But like I said, they just put, during the show, Google posted, they have a video showing battery life improvements between this version of Chrome and older versions. So supposedly that is much better. I'll look at that after we're done here. And that's it.
Excellent. Excellent. I might give you another pick real quick before we get to Mary Jo Foley's picks of the week, and that is our t-shirt of the week. We got, you know, as you know, we've moved into the new studio. We call our TESS, the East Side Studio. And we've got new t-shirts with the TWIT logo on the front, the East Side, the new East Side Studio logo on the back. It's quite lovely. We also have mugs. We also have hoodies, pullovers. The key, though, on this is to order before, let's see, you've got 19 days left. So before the, all of these are done limited time only, and just to make them kind of exclusive. I really like the pullovers. And you can get those right now. They're only $32 from the pullovers because we're really not trying to make a lot of money on these. It's mostly just to celebrate the brand new studios. You can find them at teespring.com/twit. That's TEESPRING, teespring.com/twit. Now it's time for Mary Jo Foley and her Enterprise Pick of the Week.
The Enterprise Pick is Windows 10 Enterprise E3 and E5. The reason they're the pick this week is they are starting to be available to customers. The E3 plan, which is a subscription plan primarily for small businesses that Microsoft wants to get to move up to the enterprise version of Windows 10, that went on sale through cloud solution providers as of September 1. All this is basically is a replacement for a software assurance, and Microsoft's selling you what would be available to you under software assurance through a subscription through these partners, these cloud solution provider partners. And that's what Windows 10 E3, Enterprise E3 is. Enterprise E5 is all the same stuff that's in Enterprise E3 plus Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection, which is Microsoft's new attack prevention and blocking service. That one is going on sale October 1st through the cloud solution providers. And the pricing on this, $7 per user per month for E3, $14 per user per month for E5 through cloud solution providers. We've talked about this subscription plan on Windows Weekly before, but it is now starting to become available, and that's why it's the Enterprise pick this week.
Excellent. Code name?
So the code name, this is another Microsoft code name that came to us through the Walking Cat. The code name is Concord. Concord is a code name for the build language that the Microsoft Windows team is using to improve the speed at which they can compile Windows builds. If I just looked at the link on my story and Microsoft has 404'd it. but what I luckily
Wait,
copied
did you
this
look
down.
At it in Chrome though?
Oh, yeah. So you're right.
You might want to just, you never know.
It's funny. I got a 404 on Chrome. So no, it's 404'd.
Okay.
Well, no. Sometimes Chrome
does.
Oh,
you mean on IE. Tonight. Let's see on IE if it also does.
Because it's a keynote,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I'm getting that also.
Yeah. Yep. So they took away the page. Concord's the code name for the build language. What the Walking Cat found was there's a conference happening this week where a Microsoft technical fellow, I think he's a technical fellow, Wolfram Schultz, is speaking. And he's talking about Concord. He's also talking about how Concord is something not just for the Windows team maybe, but also something the developer division is now contributing to at Microsoft. So the point of this whole thing is Microsoft has been developing all these kind of cool software development tools for internal use at Microsoft. And there has been some speculation that they may make some of these tools externally facing and make them available to outside developers. We don't know if Concord is in that group of tools that they may try to make available to other people, but still an interesting code name and an interesting project that the Walking Cat, our buddy on Twitter, found this week.
And my favorite grape. Although, well, it used to be my favorite grape until I discovered cotton candy grapes.
Oh, really? Is there such a thing?
They taste like cotton candy.
Oh, man. What kind of wine do they make with them?
Cotton Rose candy leaves. Wine.
Cotton candy wine. Delicious.
It's
I hope it's a dessert wine, Leo.
Is it really? Is it really a wine?
I don't think they make wine with it. They're table grapes.
No. Table grapes. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, the best, you know what, the best grape juice you ever had is the Zinfandel grape juice before they turn it into wine, just like from the pressing.
Man. Oh,
OMG.
Wow.
It is incredible.
Wow. Do they sell that just for regular consumption?
I think sometimes I see it around. A friend of mine is a vintner. He makes an old vine Zinfandel. And he happened to be there after the crush, and he said, "You want to taste it?" I said, yeah. Mm. It's so good.
Wow.
I would drink that every day, and then I would have diabetes and die. Let's talk about beer, because beer can't hurt you. Beer can only make you happier.
It can only make you feel better.
Yes.
With beer goggles.
And look better.
Yes. Better. Everything's better with beer.
Yep.
So this is a very odd beer pick, I'll admit. So it's a cucumber saison. It's from a really good Chicago brewery called Pipeworks. So if you like the taste of cucumbers, you will probably love the saison. It tastes like you are drinking a cucumber. That is the only way I can explain this. It smells like a cucumber. It tastes like a cucumber. It's just
very refreshing.
It's very refreshing. If you do not like cucumbers, do not even try this beer, because you will hate it. There are people who hate cucumbers. I don't know who these people are, but there are these people out there.
Yeah.
But it's super refreshing. It tastes, I'm not kidding you. Like, I've never had, you know, when people say this beer kind of tastes like X or Y, this tastes like a cucumber.
Wow. Well, saisons are always very light.
And bubbly, yeah. Refreshing.
You know, it's a small step from a cucumber saison to a pickle saison.
Mm.
It's a small but important step, Leo. I don't think the things that have been pickled make for good alcohol.
Pickles are fermented, as is beer, but...
Yeah, a pickle beer. I'm ready. Beer. Save you time.
Just drink right out of the pickle jar to see why that.
Yum, yum, yum.
But yeah, Pipeworks is the brewery, and they have a lot of other good beers. But this one I got to try recently, and nice. It was very interesting. Nice.
Yummy, yum, yum.
Wow,
man, I envy you. I don't, you know, I feel like I really shouldn't get into beer drinking. I envy you, because it's just an amazing array of flavors and combinations.
Yep. It is. I know.
But I'm fat enough as it is. I just really feel like that would be a bad new habit to acquire.
It is a bad habit, but if you try to just do taste, sometimes it works.
Yeah, I guess I could taste. Yeah.
Yeah, you could do taste.
Yeah, because tasting never leads to more drinking.
No.
It never does. Never.
It's a gateway drug. Well, see, I'd love to try this. This sounds great.
Yeah.
And actually, it'd be perfect for a Chicago hot dog and then a Pipeworks cucumber saison. Now, that actually
would be good together.
I figure, my mom, I was talking to my mom, she's 83. I was talking to her over the break, and she says, oh, I'm so bad. I don't go for my walk, and I sometimes I eat, you know, bread and stuff. I said, Mom, you're 83. You should do whatever the hell you want now.
Yeah.
I'm hoping if I can get to 80, man, I'm going to have beer and cucumbers and Chicago hot dogs till the cows come home and exercise. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Right?
That should be the reward.
You earned it.
Yeah.
I know. Doctors all over the country are going.
I'm an American, so I'm doing that stuff now. And I'm going to pay for it later.
Yeah. Hey, guys, that good show. Too. Even though there was nothing to say, you managed to fill it with fun and
we said a lot about nothing.
And inspire me to really seriously consider something that terrifies me, which is going
once
cold
again,
turkey. Once
again, would like to just voice my dissent on this idea. You know?
I'm in your corner. Do it.
You know, it's kind of like you're standing on the edge of the
devil on your shoulder,
of the diving board, and you're going,
do it.
Yeah, she's saying do it, and you're saying, don't do it, Leo. Don't do it. You'll be sorry. Don't do it, Leo. Wow. It would be,
you can always try it for the first week, and if you're feeling like this is just terrible, you can switch.
Well, that's the thing. I'll be stuck. If it is terrible, you know, if I'm really shaking and suffering, I'm stuck. I don't think I will be, though. I think I'll have fun.
I do, too.
I bought a new cribbage board and a portable backgammon set. All I need is a book. I could do this.
Yeah, and then a phone, a tablet, and a laptop.
Yeah.
Maybe even go with an adult coloring book if you really
want to. I'm not that desperate, no.
Make sure they make you wear a bib.
What are you doing? What are you doing, Leo? I'm coloring.
Who's our special little traveler?
Coloring. See how nicely I stay in the lines. I'm coloring.
It would be very relaxing.
I could bring 128 color box of Crayolas.
Sure.
You could meditate.
It's very tempting. Wow.
Is it?
Well, it does. It's kind of pressure to, you know, I was thinking, I had all these plans of how I was going to do a pictures every day, yep. do blog yeah. posts and send back postcards and all this digital stuff and Instagram. And there's a lot of pressure.
Then you talked to Mary Jo for like 11 minutes and all of a sudden your whole vacation is changing.
I'm a very persuasive person.
You are.
You're the Antichrist is what you are. what happened here?
To be continued, .. Paul Theroux is at Theroux.com, of which I am proud to say I am now a premium member.
Hooray.
Easy enough, just $42, and you can get all sorts of great stuff. But there's plenty of free stuff there, too, Theroux.com. But we want to support Paul in his endeavor to make all of this accessible, understandable, to keep up on what's happening in the world of Microsoft. He also has written some great books. You'll find them at leanpub.com, including his latest field guide to Windows 10. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, files regularly at that ZDNet site, keeping us all abreast of everything happening in the world of Microsoft. She's got incredible, incredible sources inside Redmond and really lets us know. And it's so great we could get you both together every week. Now, we did this show on Tuesday because of the Apple event on Wednesday, but we'll be back to our regular time. Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC next week. September 14th, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'll be here for that, but I will not be here after the 14th. On the 21st and the 28th, I'll be out of the country. And then I'll be back on, I might be back October 4th. Well, I'll have arrived home the day before. I may be so jet lagged. I think I might still have Father Robert or somebody fill in for me.
Out for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see how I feel. Hey, thanks everybody for being here. And don't forget, you can get the show, of course, at twit.tv/WW and all of your favorite podcatchers, including the great Twit apps on every platform. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Oh, bye. I was going to mention, and I see it's in the notes and I forgot, but we kind of did it within the middle of it, Ignite in Amsterdam.
I've had a bunch of people asking on Twitter today about Ignite. We are having an event, like a meetup at Ignite. Is it Tuesday night?
No, it may be Wednesday. We just haven't finalized it.
We will
have a meetup.
Okay. In Atlanta.
And we'll have a meetup. There's time. We could talk about that all next week.
Yeah, we can.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one. Take care.
You too.